Money, money, money is the lifeblood of an economy, and virtue is the lifeblood of a civilization. We are quickly running out of both. Actually, we're about to have more money than we've ever imagined, but we may lack the virtue to handle it.
You ready?
We're live. 2014 will be filled with... What's that?
Nothing. I almost played a song over the top of you.
2014 will be filled with more danger than 2013, which closes a century of the long march from the old republic to empire abroad and police state at home, the road to serfdom. They will come fast and furious, but the major obstacles are normalcy and confirmation bias. The corporatist media is selling the success of Obamacare and economic recovery. No surprise as they carry water for the imperial president. But what are the opposition? Silence. The Republican establishment has plowed the road and fixed the potholes. There will be no real friction in D.C., merely rhetorical posturing, no threat of a shutdown, no negotiation over a debt increase, no spending cuts, and more and more and more money created out of nothing by a mere digital entry backed by nothing of value, nothing safe for power. The root of the corruption of the Democrat-Republican duopoly is the infinite easing by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The party in power furthers the agenda of the empire abroad and police state at home, while the controlled opposition spins the rhetorical wheels to give the masses a little hope that they can vote the bums out. And farther we go down the road to serfdom. The political theater works so long as the citizens are distracted. Less and less of us vote and participate in the never-ending political process, and the candidates and office holders merely play their parts like professional wrestlers. Yet every now and then, things get troublesome for the imperial establishment and corporatist shills. Sometimes the citizens elect statesmen who actually follow through on their campaign oratory, and the duopoly begins to flail. 2014 is the year of the grassroots, the year of genuine opposition to the moneyed and political classes, the year of authentic conservatism and candid liberty. 2014 is the year we strike back at the empire. But only if you start now, if you increase the ranks, if you don't let up, and if you act with victory in mind. Dr. Ron Paul said, believe me, the next step is a currency crisis because there will be a rejection of the dollar. The rejection of the dollar is a big, big event. And then your personal liberties are going to be severely threatened. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives who are right to demand the repeal or at least the delay of Obamacare and an audit of the Federal Reserve to defeat the cultural Marxists, the statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrats. First, you must end the Fed and crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your hoax, Rex. It's a hoax because I'm broadcasting from a jury-rigged system because the NSA is trying to shut this show down.
Well, I am Trog, and probably. I thought maybe you guys had a snowstorm or, you know, an icicle or something back there on the East Coast.
And we had a snowstorm, but that didn't account for the whole system crashing. But anyway, we're here anyway. Come hell or high water, snowstorms, neither rain nor sleet nor dead of night is going to stop Rex and Trog.
No, not at all. I love your opening dialogue, your poetry. Actually, it is, you know, I always give you a hard time about that. But this is an important topic. And we've said it before, and I say it probably every show. If you don't have economic freedom, you will never have personal freedom. And the powers that be know that. And for 100 years, they have, you know, ever since the Fed was created, you know, out of this felonious concept of stabilizing the market, we have had crash after crash after recession after depression and constant wars. And that's a fact. That's not a conspiracy theory. It's a fact. Most people do not understand the Fed is a private bank owned by private bankers who, and it's never been audited. I mean, there are times when I see the amount of law and rules and court cases and things, excuse me, things that go on in this country, and to think that the number one thing that controls our economy has never been audited. I don't know if that's a wake-up call to people. I don't know if people just don't give a crap if American Idol is on or New Year's Eve was the most important thing of your life for 2013 or what the case is. But this is serious stuff. Now, for a lot of years, and in my lifetime, I've experienced a couple recessions, you know, the 80s savings and loan, the dot-bomb, and then this big one, you know, the housing bubble. And all of us have experienced these things. Most people don't understand why they happen and how they work themselves out. In other words, what are the mechanisms and how long does it take to recover and that kind of thing. Most people don't understand that. And we've spent a fair amount of time. It's not our main focus, but we've spent a fair amount of time on it. Dr. Ron Paul has been preaching on this stuff for 30-plus years. You know, his son has taken up the mantle. There is a gentleman, Peter Schiff, who is an investment guy, very interesting character. You can look him up. He has a show every day. I didn't know his show was daily, to be honest with you. I'm a little remiss on that. But I don't know how I tripped over him. Maybe it was you or whatever. But I started listening to this guy, and he is an Austrian economics. He was actually Ron Paul's economic advisor, for his run for presidency. And the guy is sharp. He's grounded. He predicted, and I just found this out in this video that we're, or this audio that we're going to be working off of today, that or tonight, that he also predicted the dot-bomb crash. And so the guy's getting pretty good at figuring out what's broken. And he's also pretty good at talking about what needs to happen for this thing to actually recover. And I remember this, and I'm sure you do too in your lifestyle and things you do in your life, but I remember the dot-bomb crash. I remember $1 trillion disappearing overnight. And I lived in the Redmond-Bellevue area, you know, the central area of Microsoft and all this money and all this speculative businesses. I was actually involved in a dot-com startup. So I lived it and had been out of Alaska a little less than a year. I got involved with some friends that were going to do something, and we were all going to try to, you know, catch that rising wave of, you know, IPOs and all that. So I'm very versed in this thing from, you know, been there, done that. And I remember that crash. I remember $1 trillion, you know, just disappearing overnight. It was like 1.2 or whatever. Don't quote me on the number. And I remember a week or two later going, it didn't correct. I just, you know, I'm not that smart on finances. I've been around it. I've been in free enterprise all my life. I've tried to read and study, but I'm not some investment broker guy. And there's terminology still confuses me sometimes, and I got to listen to Peter Schiff about 50 times before I finally get everything or most of everything he's talking about. But
that's why Ron Paul
correction never, yeah, the correction never came. And the reason it didn't come is because the federal government was pushing the next bubble, which was the beginning of the housing bubble. It was all this cheap money. The Fed had low interest rates out there. Everybody was borrowing. People were buying houses. And I used to make this statement, Rex, and I think you'd get a kick out of this, but it was one of the few original things I'd come up with in my life. And I said, people are treating, you know, living in the Seattle area. I mean, people were making bank. You know, they're buying houses all over the place, selling a house 2 years later, you know, making 15, 20%, you know, rolling it into a bigger house. Getting into the rental business. I mean, you know, I was right in the middle of all this. And they made everything so cheap that everybody could play, and they treated houses like junk bonds. And that was the thing that I just remember one day just going, this is not good. I've been here before because I was a contractor in the 80s. And I remember the crash, you know, in Alaska. And then a year or two later, bam, in Seattle market. And the thing is, these contractors were building houses like crazy, man. They're building subdivisions, 100, 500,000 houses, just going crazy. And you'd look around you, and something in your gut would say, well, who's going to buy them all? You know, because sooner or later, I mean, it's not like people were, you know, punching out children, you know, 10 to 20 at a shot. You know, that it just seemed like it was this overbuild. And having been in it before and lost a ton of money, you know, from upper 1% income bracket to living in my truck and starting over kind of money, all right? You know, having been there before, my instincts were screaming. Now, I didn't understand all the you know, technical crap behind it, but my gut told me something was coming, and I was trying to read books and study it. And then we have this current situation. I know I'm going a little long, sorry, but we have this current situation. And we had the housing bubble crash. And one of the things that I saw was this new president comes on board, the Fed starts printing money like crazy, we start borrowing money like crazy, we start bailing out the jerks that got us here, you know, the banks and Wall Street, and everybody was bitching and moaning and, you know, looking for blood and looking for people to hang, and here we are 5 years later, we're over $17 trillion in debt, $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities. Not one thing has been done to curb the government. It's grown like crazy. Debt's grown. Borrowing's grown. And really, there's been no correction because of what the Fed has done and the government for that matter. So here we are at a situation where they claim every day about how great the stock market's doing, unemployment's supposed to be 7%, and everything's wonderful. What's the first thing that comes out of our president's mouth? Oh, we need to get these people their unemployment benefits. You know, they've only been on it 5 years. And you're like, well, I thought the economy was improving. And here's another one, and you didn't see the article because of our technical difficulties, but I just posted an article that on New Year's Eve, while everybody was getting ready to go party, you know, in this great new time we're having economically, the government borrowed another $125 billion. Bam, just like that. Add another $1,000 of debt to every household in America. Just like that, while you were getting ready to go party. While the president is telling Republicans they better, you know, fix the law and give us more money for unemployment, while out of the other side of his mouth he's telling everybody how wonderful everything's going. And that's what we're here for. And I don't like this conversation personally, but it's an important one. And so we're on it. And tonight we're gonna play, you know, one of the, I don't know, probably one of the smartest guys in the world, or maybe he's not the smartest guy in the world and he's just one of the honest ones. I don't know, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think he's honest. I think he's smart. I don't know if he's the smartest, but so what makes him look so smart is the fact that he's one of the few Austrians who actually
is he Austrian?
Wall Street. Well, Peter Schiff himself is not actually Austrian. He's from New Haven, Connecticut, but his economics are Austrian. And he's one of the few on Wall Street is actually an Austrian. Wall Street is a Keynesian construct. They're all Keynesians. And if you're getting confused between, you know, what are Rex and Trox talking about, Austrians and Keynesians? Keynesians are the economists and the political hacks that have created the world in which you live. They are the followers of Lord Maynard Keynes, a British queer Fabian socialist who developed this system of spending and printing money in order to increase government power, and the Austrians were the ones that countered that because they are true free market economists. So that's why Peter Schiff seems so smart, because he's the only guy on Wall Street who actually knows squat about real economics and isn't immersed in Keynesian crap.
Well, I think that, yeah, you're right on. And I think that people should study these guys, because our economic system is a mess and it ain't going to get better. And I don't want to, you know, get into too much detail, because we have the clips of Peter Schiff speaking, and he's very articulate, and it's a great interview. We tripped over it, yesterday? And I was just like, wow, this is awesome, because I try to play something from him every week just because of his delivery and what he stands for. So you want to play the first clip?
Yeah, I think let's do that. I think the first clip, if I remember correctly, is pretty much him talking political nature as he flies into London. I think this interview took place in London, and I think that it's a 3 to 4 minute clip, and it's more politics than economics. But let's do it, and we'll come back on the other side.
Okay, here we go, folks.
When you land in Heathrow and you kind of come into London, I was wondering if you see things about the UK or being in Europe that are like distinctly different from the US, whether it comes to the way people do business over here or even the fact that if it's more of a socialist government, or do you see anything different, or even London as a financial center?
Well, I mean, it seems not much different to me than being in the States. I think it's a little more charming, London is, than New York, just walking the streets here. And, you know, it's just it's been around for a lot longer. You have, hundreds of years of architecture predating a lot of things that we have in the U.S. But, you know, it makes me think really of the glory days of the British Empire when it was still ruled by the crown. And if you think about Britain back then, before they had democracy, when you had a monarchy, there was actually more capitalism here in Britain. It was a freer society. The British subjects wouldn't let the king get away with an income tax or anything as tyrannical as that. So most kings or monarchs treated their subjects a lot better than democratically elected governments treat their citizens today. And I think that if the UK had still been ruled by a monarch and was a constitutional monarchy with limited powers and the rule of law and private property, and they still had that type of economy, you can imagine the wealth that would exist in the UK today. It might still be really the center of commerce and wealth in the world. Instead, it's another country, but it could have been a lot more, and it was a lot more before the disease of socialism infected it. And a lot of it did it through democracy, because that's what the people voted for. One of the beauties of monarchy is people aren't voting. So instead, they're just living their lives, and they're creating and they're producing, and you don't have people voting for theft. You don't have people promising something for nothing, because the monarchs are there, and they don't have to worry about getting elected, and their children don't have to worry about getting elected either, because they just inherit the title.
I never heard it that way. I guess if they really screw up, then they get overthrown and killed, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, history shows that the public won't tolerate a king or a queen that would be so oppressive. I mean, if there was a king today in America or the UK, if they still had the power, if they tried to oppose income taxes like the ones we have now, there'd be a revolution. Nobody would accept that type of tax system. I mean, think about the United States. You know, we had the revolution and we broke from the British. It was over taxes.
Right.
And the taxes were tiny compared to what we tolerate today in the United States. I mean, Americans are paying levels of taxation that would be unthinkable around the time of the American Revolution, either in the United States or the UK. Nobody would have tolerated that. Yet we routinely do it when we do it to ourselves, when we think, oh, it's okay because we vote for it. But, I didn't vote for it. You know, there are a lot of people who wouldn't vote for these taxes. But we can't overcome the majority. And what we really have is tyranny of the majority, not just tyranny from one individual, but tyranny from the majority. And the problem is you can't really overthrow it.
How much of your commentary?
Yeah, tyranny of the majority. It's a fascinating concept, because when you really think about it, in some sense, where we are today in America is the logical end of democracy or democratic processes. See, when you have a king who's forced upon you, you're not responsible for the things he does. And if he's a good king, he's a good steward, he takes care of the kingdom. And if he's a bad king, he's going to rape and pillage. And what's going to happen is, because you have no sense of ownership in the monarchy and he's being oppressive, you're going to revolt. But if you have a democratic process, that impetus for revolt is taken away because you think that you're going to revolt at the next ballot box. And I think that unless we realize that the power to our government flows from us to them, and it isn't privileges granted by them to us, then we're going to take it back. And it doesn't require a revolution. It requires the enforcement of the existing law, the Constitution. Right, Chris?
Yes, sir. Sorry, I was getting ready to load something in the chat. I was actually fascinated by his description and how he explained, and he goes on, and I don't know if it's the way you did the clips or what, but he goes on and talks about Hong Kong and how Hong Kong was set up underneath a monarchy, and they had no income tax and very low corporate tax, and Hong Kong became a huge center of prosperity for the British Empire, and now that the British turned it back over to China, it's a huge prosperity mechanism for the Chinese Empire. But what he said was very, and I've often wondered this, because when I study American history, especially around the point, you know, the 1776 era, coming into that, the things that ticked the colonists off and made them, you know, go radical on the British government and end up fighting a war and kicking them off the island were small compared to the things that people put up with today. And one of the things that he said in his little segue of dialogue was that, you know, people have voted all these things. They voted away their rights in order to get things given to them. And politics went from managing a country and creating the maximum amount of freedom and independence and the maximum environment for prosperity. It went from that to who do I vote for that's going to give me more? And when you go through that cycle and you end up at that place, in fact, you know, if you study Rome, you see the whole, you know, dynamics, that flow chart, you know, to that point. And almost every civilization that gets to a point where the masses start voting in more and more and more for themselves, and they vote in politicians who promise them things and then get into office, and then they screw the economy and screw the people and launch wars to pay for all this crap. The next step is pretty bad after that. And I think that's the thing that I hope and pray doesn't happen. But if it doesn't turn around, to some degree, if we don't get some politicians in there that care about the country more than they do their staying in power and their lobbyist money and all that kind of stuff, we're in really bad shape. And I think that, you know, as we get into more clips, Peter Schiff will, you know, he gets into more details about, you know, what it will look like, you know, what that crash or the next correction that the government and the Fed have not allowed to happen through the last two cycles of downturns in our economy, you know, what it's going to look like if we don't get some people in there that stop causing the problem and putting Band-Aids on the problem. Because our president and his administration and the rhinos in the House and Senate refuse to deal with corrective measures. And that's, for any of us who understand, you know, economics or freedom for that matter, that's the scary part. You know, I mean, you know, people talk about Obama's this and whatever, you know, bottom line is economics. If you don't have stable economics, you're in trouble. And that gets into the conversation that we've had a little bit on every show talking about the BRICS consortium, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South America, and about 21 other countries that are moving away from the U.S. trade dollar. There's only three things that have kept America afloat through these bad economic decisions is our debt, our printing, and these other countries, and our U.S. trade dollar, you know, the petrodollar, whatever you want to call it, because it was set up after the Second World War through Bretton Woods. It was set up so that everybody in the world, if you did any transaction in any foreign currency, it always traded back to U.S. dollar and then would move back into the next currency that you were doing business with. That means if you owned a oil company or a automaker or whatever, you know, you made jeans and you used three different countries you know, to grow your product, to ship it, to assemble it, you know, whatever the case may be, that each transaction would revert back into U.S. dollars and then back into the next country, like if you were paying wages or buying parts or whatever the case may be. And that was where the U.S. that was the U.S. dollar. Now, we replaced the British pound sterling after the Second World War. You know, the winner has the might and the right. And so here we are. You know, we've got a world out there that no longer trusts the U.S. For multiple reasons, whether it's, you know, invading countries or
we don't
trust
the U.S.
But you know, whether it's drones or wars or bad financial decisions or crooked politicians, there's a lot of countries who have been part of our economic system on a worldwide basis for a long time that are getting sick of it. And so this consortium, BRICS, forms, and a whole bunch of countries are starting to move towards bypassing the U.S. trade dollar, which is trillions of dollars out there, Rex. And if that comes home on top of all the money that's been printed, you ain't seen inflation. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I think there's only one reason that hasn't happened yet. I mean, we're 42 years into
big guns.
Actually, we're 100 years into this scheme, as we talked about on our New Year's show last week, which, by the way, you can check out on our Blog Talk Radio page. All of our shows are there, so just go to Blog Talk Radio, search Liberty's Thunder. Every show that we have is right there. You can play it in your browser, play it in your mobile device. If you go below the scrolling graphics, there's a download link. Just right-click on that. You get an MP3. You can burn a CD. You can send an email. Remember that we don't get paid to do this. We work our asses off to make it happen, and sometimes things go wrong, as they did today, and technical difficulties and all that kind of stuff. But we keep saying what we think authentic conservatism is, what liberty is, and trying to bring you information so that at a grassroots level, instead of nitpicking and fighting with each other over your little pet peeve issue or your little pet peeve candidate, you work together to stop this from going all the way to its logical conclusion, which is the destruction of our country. So we thank you for sharing the show, because you're the only reason anybody knows this is here. We really appreciate everybody who's sent it out on Facebook. And if you're on Facebook, go to Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom, and there's some real good discussion about these very topics. And also go to the Liberty Thunder show page, like that page, and you will get notifications in your news feed about when we're broadcasting, which is generally 10 p.m. Eastern Sundays, but sometimes we do other shows. We're trying to do part two of American Conservatism Defined, but apparently Blog Talk Radio and the Internet has some other ideas for us, such as not even being able to do once a week, but we'll keep trying. But I think, Chris, that the only reason that this hasn't happened yet, and it started in 1913 with the creation of the Federal Reserve, it went full steam in 71 when we severed the last tie with any gold standard. Now, 42 years later, the math is adding up to the point where we are facing a collapse. The only reason it hasn't happened yet is because we can blow up the world, and the world knows it. But some countries are starting to challenge us, and it ain't the jihadi terrorists, because those are like gnats. They can't do much. But other countries are building up their militaries, and the only way that they can move away from the dollar is if we are no longer a global player. And the neocons and the Federal Reserve and their masters are going to make sure that we use every bullet that we have to clamp down on the resistance at home and the resistance abroad. So if you want to move away from the dollar, you're going to have to take down the United States. And the only way to take down the United States is from within. That's how serious this is. But the reason that they are so desperate now, the Federal Reserve, the Democrats, the rhinos, they're so desperate because more and more people are onto them. More and more people are aware, and more people are taking action. And this is the year to strike, because they are on their heels. And you mentioned correction. There is no economic correction, because the Federal Reserve won't allow it to happen. You have to be that correction. It's going to hurt, but your choice is rip it off like a Band-Aid and recover your liberty and your economy, or, as Newt Gingrich said in the 2012 primaries, watch the losers manage the decline. And he was talking about Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I did.
Yeah, I was just You know, I watched a couple documentaries today. I'm not sure I should have watched both of these back-to-back. They were very well done. But they covered a lot of issues. And, you know, we've been at this now for, I don't know, beginning of the primaries, so a while. And we've been having these conversations. I've probably researched and studied more than I ever have in my life. I think I've always tried to be on top of things and understand my country and the rule of law and economics. And, you know, I've always been inside the world of free enterprise. So I, you know, probably maybe a little bit more aware than the average person, but I have never studied like I have in the last year. And I'm not sure I like what I've learned. You know, I can't change it, you know, and I can't reverse and go back to being, you know, ignorant. You know, every time I go out there and, you know, get prosperous and work my tail end off, you know, the economy crashes and, you know, you lose 20, 30, 40, 50% of your net worth and you lose a big chunk of your value of your dollar and then you feel like you're starting over. There ain't a whole lot of start over left. And it seems like in the past, you know, we were able to kind of, oh, man, that was bad, but, you know, here we go. And we jump back on the bandwagon and, you know, in or the little wheel that the hamster goes around in, and we go after it again and we produce again. And this time we're not producing again. And I think Peter Schiff covers it well. You know, I don't want to replace his dialogue because he's the, you know, the world, you know, the guy that sees the world. You know, and that's just what I really want to do is help people understand. I think the most important thing is understanding that your vote does count. I know there's voter, you know, fraud and you know, people, you get on the internet and people are like, ah, why you bother voting? You know, they control everything, you know, and that defeatist attitude. But when less than 37% of the people show up and vote in a midterm, especially as important as like 2010 was or this one coming up is, you know, one of the biggest problems in this country is people are not engaged. Get out the vote was, you know, was a democratic machine apparatus. And that's one of the reasons they won. The other reason they won was because we put a liberal Democrat up on our side, and that didn't help matters much. But it's important in all of this that you give it everything you got. You know, if we get control of the Senate and we keep control of the House and we get some new leadership in there, you know, people who won't hand Obama everything he wants on a silver platter, you know, while they get in front of a mic and they say they're not, and then they do every item. All they do is just act like they're fighting and upset, and then at the last minute, just like on New Year's Eve, another $125 billion, what the hell? You know, when they raised the debt ceiling, did that little deal a month ago, that was over $400 billion in one day. They just went, oh, cool, borrow it, spend it, print it, because we won't fix it. That's really what the problem is, Rex, is they won't fix it, because fixing is a political suicide, because the majority of people in this country vote on who's going to give them what in the moment. A party says, sorry, we ain't going to give you nothing. I can't afford to give you anymore because we really don't have it, and we can't print anymore, and all these countries we've been borrowing from won't lend us anymore, and that's a topic we've talked about with China. You know, they're pulling back. They're going, we're tired of buying your debt. Because whenever you monetize debt and you print a bunch of money, if you owe a country $1 trillion, you know, all of a sudden it's worth $800 billion. Why in the hell would they borrow? Why would they buy your bonds if they drop $200 billion because you have bad fiscal policy? I mean, this is really, it's almost like stand-up comedy, Rex, sometimes when you think about this stuff, how people do not understand what these politicians are doing or what the Fed is doing. But the Fed,
they don't understand what they're doing.
Well, no, that's true. Well, yeah, maybe. I think some of them are just flat-out crooked.
Well, yeah, I think that there's a lot of them that are crooked, but what I mean is most of them are ignorant. They just like their positions, and they think the vote does this, and I get money for that, and this sort of makes sense. And they're tinkering around the edges when the whole system is based on debt and usury and based on a global hegemonic military power. Why do you think we're constantly at war? And the American people don't want to be at war. The American people don't want to use debt as money, but most of them don't understand it, and that's the whole scam. And the fundamental issue with this whole crap about, you know, which politician is going to give me the most stuff. Well, they're not giving you anything. I mean, let's be clear. They're not giving anybody anything that they haven't taken from somebody else. And overwhelmingly, because of the machinations of the Federal Reserve, and if you don't understand this, you don't have to get into a whole economic. You just have to understand that every time they create more money, they reduce the value of the existing money. So your dollar just got to be 98 cents overnight. It still says $1 Federal Reserve note on it. You go to the store, it's a dollar, but it's worth 2 cents less, and it buys 2 cents less stuff. So that means that everything now just went up in price 2 cents. And that happens every single day. So they're robbing all of us. It's the largest wealth redistribution scheme from the poor and the middle class to the uber, uber wealthy, the 0.00001%. I'm not talking about the guy who has a business or a private practice and makes $250,000 a year, or the guy that's got $3 million socked away and he's living off 5% interest at 150 or whatever. I'm talking about George Soros, 5%. Bill Gates, Warren Buffett type wealth, okay? And that's who's gaining in this scheme at the expense of the rest of us. So when they give somebody an Obama phone or extend unemployment benefits or provide you with free health care that costs an arm and a leg, right, they're still ripping you off. They're not giving you anything, and that's the problem.
Right.
And it's a scheme that's going to collapse sooner or later. The sooner, the better. And the way you do that is you get people to audit the Federal Reserve, expose it, show the American people what a scam it is, and for Congress to take back its authority as the coiner of money so we can have U.S. Treasury dollars and get the corruption out of D.C. But the corrupt are going to fight you every step of the way. The good news is there's more of us than there is of them.
Yeah, we just need more educated people. You ready for this next shift?
Sure.
Okay, 3 minutes and 55 seconds. I gave you the data, but you remember what the load is. Is this, which one is this?
This is right after the next one, so you know it. Just run with it. He's talking, okay. Here he gets into politics and economics.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
You know, you obviously ran for office in the past. I mean, as you get older, do you find that you're looking at things more from political spectrums as opposed to just pure financial?
How old do you think I am?
I don't know.
Well, I guess I'm older than you guys. Well, no, yeah. I'm 50, so I am getting older. But there's a lot of politics in when I talk about the markets or a lot of economics involved in it, because I'm generally investing about the big picture. So I don't spend a lot of time when I'm, you know, talking, getting into the particular details of a particular company or, you know, the balance sheet of a company or, you know, what I think is going to happen to earnings. Just lots of people talk about that. I mean, there's nothing really unique about having an outlook on a particular company. So what I think is more unique is my perspective on the global economy and in particular on the U.S. economy. And a lot of it relates to politics, because a lot of what's wrong with our economy can only be fixed politically. The problem is it's very difficult to outvote the majority that wants something for nothing. And as the government gets people hooked on a handout, they vote for it. Even if the reason that they're poor is because of these government programs, once the government creates this sense of dependency where people depend on the programs, then they just vote for whoever promises to continue them or expand them. They don't realize that they'd be much better off if none of these programs existed, and instead there was a lot more freedom and opportunity in the country, and then they could ultimately enjoy a much better lifestyle if we had a freer economy.
You know, I want to get into what you're thinking, where we're going to go economically, but as a financial center, London, you know, it managed to battle off any other, you know, places in Europe like Frankfurt. I mean, it seems to have survived, but are you impressed with it as a financial center? Do you think it's going to get bigger or smaller when it comes to, say, Singapore, Tokyo, and New York?
Well, relative to New York, it'll get bigger, but I do think that Asia, so Hong Kong, Shanghai, I think those centers are going to grow in influence over time as more and more wealth is created in Asia, as more savings are accumulated that need to be invested. I think the capital markets will grow in those regions. I mean, right now, a lot of that is outsourced to places like London or New York. But I think over time, they'll do more of that in-house.
You know, a lot of our viewers don't know the details of the financial markets, but I always say to people, like, a lot of people just kind of say, oh, the bankers are greedy, they're doing all these derivatives, we don't understand. And I'm always like, why don't you educate yourself about the markets and protect your own savings? And, you know, I think that's what you were always saying as well. And I just wanted to know what you guys are thinking for next year. You know, you were one of the people that called a lot of the recession of 08. I think you both have talked about something big happening next year. You know, most people don't know where we're going. The property prices in London are going to the ceiling. Equity prices are going up. People don't know which way things are going. So I want to get your opinion, Peter, and then your opinion, Alessio, on kind of what's going to happen next year. I know it's a general question.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to tell, rather, whether the collapse that I'm waiting for happens next year or not. I mean,
it's tough to sell into a bull market, isn't it?
Well, it's not even about selling. And you have to understand where the collapse is coming, because if you understand what, you know, what the government and the Fed did in response to the 08 financial crisis, they didn't solve the problems. They made them all worse. But in doing that, they postponed the consequence of dealing with those problems into the future. Now, whether we're going to have to deal with it in 2014 or not, or maybe 2015, I don't know. I think the sooner the better from my perspective, because I think the sooner we have to deal with it, the less painless it's going to be. Because the longer we postpone it, the bigger the problems get in the interim, and then the harder it's going to be. But all.
Oh, boy. He nails it right there. I think that, I don't know if it's on this part of the clip or the next clip where he gets into the difference between the stock market crashing or the dollar crashing. And I think that's the part that when I was first listening to this interview, and the guy was asking, and the guy asked good questions, and he maintained his show very well. You know, the flow, the flow of information. But that's the point, because you have to look at the bigger picture, which is a worldwide picture, because our dollar is spread all over the world, our debt is spread over the world, unlike it's ever been. You know, to a degree it's never been before. And when more and more countries move away from it and the politicians at home refuse to deal with the issues, you know, the underlying problems, and more countries move away, you know, it leaves that big hole. And when that hole also, if the dollar crashes, then you got serious problems. If your stock market crashes, yeah, you got problems. You know, but a lot of the wealth that's made in the stock market, you know, is speculative and borrowed, and he talks about that in this or another interview I listened to. You know, a lot of people borrowing cheap money, you know, from the banks or from the, you know, the Fed's passing out money at 0% interest. And so they're playing with it. You know, that's the same concept that fed into the housing bubble. And he talks about this bubble is the biggest one yet. And so they're all scared to death. They don't know what to do. And so they just keep printing. And then you have a Congress and a president who refuses to look at any kind of reforms. And you got waste and fraud. And you have this monstrous annual, you know, federal budget, you know, and you know, building out of the federal government, you know, which is a non-producing item. They're not making anything. It's just mind-boggling to me how liberals or socialists or whatever they think themselves are, you know, don't understand that, you know, when you have 25% of your country is government, that's a drain on society. It isn't helping society. You know, people who think that government is a good thing or a moral thing or, you know, they're there to protect you, I'm thinking, man, are we that? Have we become that stupid that we can't walk out of our house and not trip over the sidewalk on our own? Because that's really what America is becoming, and that's part of the problem and why people don't, you know, fear losing government. They think that if we lose government, then, you know, our food will go bad and there'll be nobody to inspect the meat. And, you know, they just play these fear games, you know. And so here we are at a point where, And you know, I'm like Peter Schiff on this one. I don't know, is it 2014, 2015, 2016? Who knows? You know, I just try to watch everything that's going on and be aware and educate as many people as possible. You know, you need to be out of debt and live really cheap. and not get yourself spread too thin, because these people are nuts that are running this country right now. And I mean both parties.
They're psychopaths. These people are sociopaths and psychopaths. And so, you know, they speak like you do, but they don't think like you do. And that's the fundamental problem. You need to replace these psychos and sociopaths like Lindsey Graham and Jane McCumbin and Barack Obama.
Boehner.
You need to replace them with solid citizen servants like Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Trey Gowdy, Justin Amash, and keep an eye on those guys too. You know, that's the whole premise of our government, is that we need government to order some things, very few things, in our lives together, and especially for the federal government, it's very, very few things. The local government, the county government, and the state government should be more involved in your day-to-day life than the federal government. That has practically nothing to do with just about any of us. It's just supposed to keep the 50 states from going to war against each other. That's pretty much its fundamental purpose. And
it's supposed to protect your shores and your borders.
Right. Well, yeah, which is what they don't do. And so, you know, you got to replace these people in the thing and then keep an eye on them. The whole point was that men cannot be trusted. So we have to create barriers around what they can and can't do for a temporary period of time as they are running the government. They don't run the country. We run the country. They run the government. These are complementary spheres with a nod towards us, not them. And so what can you do about it? Oh, Rex Trog, you keep pointing out all these really scary things. What are we supposed to do? Fight. You've got to find the conservatives, the libertarians, the constitutionalists, the principled people in your races, and you've got to get them elected. That's your job, and you have to do it now. You can't wait until September. You do it now. In the meantime, take initiative on things like audit the Fed. Did you sign the petition? Did you call your representatives? Did you tell other people to do the same thing? Or Rand Paul's NSA lawsuit. He's suing Barack Obama over a class action lawsuit over the NSA spying on every American. Did you get involved in that? Did you tell someone about it? The most important thing you have to ask yourself is, what did I do today? What three things did I do today to advance the conservative defense of liberty? Did you make a phone call? Did you sign a petition? Don't tell me, well, I shared an article about how bad Barack Obama is. If people haven't figured out by now how bad Barack Obama is, they're never going to figure it out. So don't waste your time on that. They're either so in love with the SOB that he can do no wrong, or they've already turned on him, or they hated him from the get-go because he's a socialist. So forget about him. What you have to worry about is, what are those that you've charged with checking him doing? And are they doing it, or are they not doing it? Are they just sounding conservative like John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, but they're really not? And did you get anybody else involved today? Did you get someone who says, I'm not really into politics? Well, politics is into you, so you better get busy. Did you get three people to take action on any of these things? Did you get three people to vet your candidate to see if they are really conservative? 95% of these incumbents get reelected. Don't give me this crap and tell me that we're fed up with all of them. What about your guy? Oh, my guy's good. Screw your guy. Oh, well, Rex, what if we get rid of some of the good ones? I don't really care. If you get rid of two or three good ones in the process of getting rid of 90 bad ones, fine. But the problem is that you keep reelecting these assholes and then bitching about what they're doing. Or you elect them because you say, well, he's severely conservative. Really? Do you really think if Mitt Romney was president today instead of Barack Obama that things would be better? Really? Come on. Do you think if in some fluke, which is impossible because of the way the ballot access is set up, but in some fluke, do you really think if Gary Johnson won today, things would be better? Really? Come on. Give me a break. It's not just about one man. Yes, we have an imperial presidency, but Congress can stop the imperial presidents at any time. They have the power. They just don't use it. It's too lucrative. And when anybody does use it, the Capitol goes apeshit and the media goes apeshit. Now, you wonder why there's a, quote, civil war in the Republican Party. When there isn't a civil war in either party, it means they're all getting along. And when they all get along in Washington, D.C., grab your wallet.
grab your family and watch out because they are going to get you. I want them to fight all the time within the parties and between the parties, within the houses, within the chambers, across Pennsylvania Avenue. They should always be at odds and always be fighting. That's the way our system works. I don't want them getting along. When they get along, we get screwed. They're supposed to be checking each other.
Yeah, that's very true. No, that's fine. I just was really agreeing with you. You know, this whole false narrative about the war and the Republican Party, it's bullcrap. It's a false narrative. It's always been there, you know. And this basic primary battle, you know, goes all the way back to the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. If you want to see a battle and you want to see some just brutal articles and comics, you know, they used to love to do comics in the old days before electronic media, and people would do these, you know, these just brutal comics. Go back to the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. Each one of those main players bought a newspaper just so they could attack the other person. And they did it all the time. It's always been this way. But you get the media for the last, I don't know, whatever, since the Tea Party formed. Actually, you know, I mean, even you can go back to Reagan era. You know, they didn't want Reagan to win for anything. There had to be such a huge upswell from the grassroots, from Americans, that said enough, you know, to make Reagan win. It wasn't the politicians, it wasn't the lobbyists, it wasn't the, you know, the status, the elites. It was the people who put Reagan in office, because they didn't want him in office for nothing. And that's the same thing that we're facing today with the Tea Party. It's the same dynamics. It's the same old, tired dialogue. You hear it in the news. You hear it in the way they say things, the way they question things, the pundits that they bring on to speak, even on Fox News, you know, just the way they say things, the verbiage, you know, the terrorists holding a gun to their head, you know, there's a war in the Republican Party, and they just continually repeat these things over and over and over again, and you get this, if you're not paying attention, you're going to believe them. Well, that's what they do. They spend billions of dollars a year building these networks out so that they can control what people think. So then you will go to the polls and you will do your duty and you'll do what they tell you to do. That's essentially what the media is. The media has nothing to do with reporting, investigative reporting, or let me just lay out the information and you decide. I mean, that would be refreshing to find somebody like that. It's all biased. It's all, you know, based on corporate sponsors. You know, you got to look at, you know, who owns the company and who advertises on the company, and that'll tell you why they say what they say. I mean, it's frustrating. So I got to be careful how I say this, but do some freaking research.
There's a certain prince from a certain sandy part of the world that owns a pretty good chunk of Fox Noise. Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, it doesn't make me wonder. I post on this stuff all the time. You know, Yeah, no kidding. No,
I was just
fine.
Supporting your point.
Yeah, you want to get into the Middle East? I'm ready.
I really don't. I'd like to get out of the Middle East.
No, I know you don't. I'm holding myself, but I've been knee-deep in it for a couple days now, you know, getting caught up on everything that's going on, so pretty fresh in mind to me. But one of the things before we go into the next clip, I think is really important to understand, that goes along with this, what I was just saying, what you were saying about the news media and how it's just a propaganda machine. And I have a list. If you go back to the 60s, we had on a national election, you know, presidential year, the four-year election. Of course, you have, you know, the House is up every 2 years, and the Senate, a third of the Senate is up every 6 years. And in 1960, when you only had, I don't know, 109 million people that were legal to vote, I mean, who knows who's legal now, illegals, dead people, whatever, but you on a national, on the main election, during presidential term, you had 63% of the people show up to vote. And on a midterm, you pulled 47.3. And then you roll through, and it's really kind of funny because you talk about the 60s, you know, that whole era. As you come out of the 60s, it starts dropping drastically by the 70s and the 80s. You were dealing with 50% showing up for a major election and only like 35, 36, 37% showing up for a midterm, you know, you're in between. And so what you had in 10, which was a Tea Party surge. Let's go back to midterms 2006. You had 37.1% show up. Then you had the Tea Party explosion, and you had 37.8. You only had 0.7, so let's just call it 1%. 1% increase in voting gave us record wins across the country. That was from local to state, you know, to the House and almost, you know, the Senate, not quite. But you look at the difference. 1960, 47.3% in midterm. 2010, 37.8. You want to know what's wrong with this country? That's the problem. Is people are not involved. And you do not have to be somebody like us who runs groups, who does radio shows, to know enough basics to understand basic economics, who the good guys are. And I'm not talking about the good and the bad guys in terms of party. I'm talking about whatever party you're in. Okay, let's say I'm on the right. All I got to do is look at the right and go, what is in that platform? Do I agree with that? Yeah, that's a pretty good platform. I agree with those fundamental things. And this is just a question. Have you ever read the Republican platform? Because
as
most
Republican?
Of those people, I wonder. You know, or they just, you know, that's for you to vote on and think they're doing, because they ain't doing it, most of them. But when you look at, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, are they protecting my rights, what I stand for as a citizen? No. Then get rid of them. We have had in the last 20, 30 years a phenomenon, if you listen to the political analysts, a phenomenon in this country that we never existed for the first couple hundred years of this country, and that is career politicians. Because in the old days, people were involved, higher percentage, not everybody. There's always seems to be a percentage that just never seem to understand they need to vote in a free country. You know, hello.
Well, 12 million people bought the Pet Rock in the 70s, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no kidding. But oh, God, you made me lose my train of thought. Oh, but anyway, the people, you know, the studies I've done shows that, you know, you can have these slime balls in there, you know, that are totally corrupt, totally, you know, violate the principles of the party and no longer representing the will of the people. But then people turn around and just vote them back in. And that was unheard of for the first 200 years in this country. If somebody got in there and they pissed off their constituents, they got rid of them. And now the machine is so corrupt, including the voting machine and the propaganda machine at local levels, that it's hard to run an incumbent. But 2010 showed that we can do it. Go ahead.
So what you're saying is, as people became less involved, the politicians got more powerful and more corrupt. You see, that's where people seem to misunderstand things. They think because we have corrupt politicians and an expanding government, that less and less people are involved. But the fact is, the reason you have a corrupt government and the reason you have criminals in it and the reason it's gotten so big is because less and less Americans are involved. So when we say,
bingo,
get rid of the guy who isn't sticking to the principles of the Constitution, the principles of conservatism, and actually following what the Republicans allege is in their platform. And I know some of you out there are like, oh, I don't want to vote, screw the Republicans. I don't care about the Republican Party. It's just a shell, but it is the shell at the national level that actually has some conservatives and libertarians in it. Now, you can run Constitution Party candidates, Libertarian Party candidates, independent candidates, but the way the system is set up right now, it's practically impossible for them to get a seat, get some local seats before you try for the national brass ring. In the meantime, send in reinforcements into the wing of the duopoly that already has conservatives and libertarians so that Justin Amash and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee are not alone. Send more people in there. But the way that you do that
it's not just simply figuring out who you're going to vote for and going out on Tuesday in November to vote for them. You have to get other people aware now and get them to get other people aware now so that there is a wave. If you can get that number up to 40% participation,
oh, that'd
be
amazing.
Conservatives and libertarians, we would change things dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
And that is not that hard.
No. Well, and a lot of people may not know this. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go.
Well, a lot of people may not know this, and I can't assume people, you know, so I'm just going to repeat myself. Maybe I'm sounding a little bit redundant. But all House seats are up every 2 years. Okay, that means every one of them is up for reelection right now. And it's
including
a mess.
Johnny Boehner.
Please. Ohio. Start sacrificing goats again, you know. Anyway, I'm being facetious. But and a third of the senators are up for reelection. And there's a high-risk situation with several of the Democrats, especially with this Obamacare debacle. And it's a good chance of getting a majority back in the Senate. Well, and what would really be incredible is to actually see some of these guys get ousted who've been in there 20, 30 years, and you can't tell them apart. You know, you can't tell if they're Democrat or Republican. Yeah, Mitch McConnell, you know, Boehner, you know, Cantor. I mean, these guys are just unbelievable.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, this is one thing to keep in mind. This is for folks in Kentucky or folks who know people in Kentucky or can make calls to Kentucky. If we get a wave on the angst against this Obamacare debacle that's crushing the economy and booting more people off their health insurance than getting people signed up for whatever crap that they're offering, if it backfires on them and Republicans do see a majority in the Senate, ask yourself this question. What difference does it make if Mitch McConnell is the majority leader? Hardly any. So if the Republicans are going to get a majority in the Senate, you have to make sure that Mitch McConnell is not one of the ones reelected, because then he might be, well, he will be the majority leader. If you want new blood, if you want, say, oh, I don't know, a Rand Paul or a Ted Cruz to be the majority leader, you got to shit can Mitch McConnell. Matt Bevin is running against him in Kentucky. Get busy in Kentucky. And speaking of little Eric Cantnot, who's here in the, I believe it's the either the 5th or the 7th district in Virginia, there's a guy running against him. His name is Peter Greenwald. And Robert Jenner over at Bard's Logic Political Talk on Blog Talk Radio has Mr. Greenwald on this Wednesday night. So check it out. Go to Blog Talk Radio, search out Bard's Logic Political Talk, and take a listen to Peter Greenwald, because Eric Cantnot is likely to be the next Speaker of the House if Ohio manages to oust Boehner and the Republicans keep the House. So you got to get rid of Eric Cantnot so that maybe you can have Trey Gowdy or Daryl Issa or Justin Amash as Speaker of the House. That would be something. Then you might actually see Obama check for the next 2 years. Small things like that, one race with only 2% more people showing up, could change things dramatically. Remember something. If it wasn't for Jeri Ryan's husband, Jeri Ryan is the actress that played 7 of 9 on Star Trek on TV. If it wasn't for her husband being caught in a scandal and losing his Senate seat in Illinois, you might never have heard of Barack Hussein Obama. That's how these things work. One race could make a huge difference.
Well, and let's look at Virginia with Cuccinelli. I mean, if you look at the turnout and you think, you know, God, it was so close. If people just got off their – I'm sorry, but this is frustrating to me, Rex. It is not that difficult to go down and cast a frickin' vote or to write a check. You know, it's just mind-boggling. Most of the good people are underfunded. And that's the truth, because the bad people are already bought and paid for. And so they only got their lobbyists and their donors and their corporate donors and their warmongering donors and, you know, and this kind of thing. And so they get a lot of money. I was listening to Peter Schiff we didn't upload that part, but when the guy was asking about his Senate run, and he's saying the gal, she spent $30 million.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and you think $30 million bucks to buy a seat? Yeah, but, you know, if she's a crook, or he, you know what I'm saying, is already bought and paid for to those, you know, defense contractors, you know, the warmongers, and all the corporations and the insurance
big
companies
pharma.
And the people. You know, that's billions of dollars in their pocket to get, you know, a nice, compliable, you know, compliant crook in that seat. And I'm not saying she is. I'm just using that as an example. You know, and it's kind of a wake-up call. The good guys, and like, and this is frustrating to me, maybe because, you know, we spend a lot of time on this, but when Amash, who's an incredible guy, he really is. He has an economics degree. And that's why they kicked him off the finance committee.
And he's an Austrian.
Not a Keynesian. He actually has a degree in economics, so we can't have him on this committee. Freaking crooks. Anyway.
That was Boehner that did
Amash,
that.
Yeah, and Amash is having to kind of, and for lack of a better term, he's having to beg for money to keep his damn seat because the rhinos are trying to run a guy who is just pitiful. And they will spend a fortune to get rid of Amash because he's a constitutionalist. He posts his votes on his Facebook page so you know what he's thinking, why he voted the way he voted. He won't take the bribes, you know, from all the corporate sponsors. And so, you know, I mean, he's kind of the young Ron Paul in a lot of ways, very, very honest. And so he's being, you know, they're spending a fortune. If you spend $30 million or $10 million, And you lie enough, you can win in this damn country. Unfortunately, because people don't pay attention.
Yep.
Yeah. If people don't pay attention. So when you have a guy like Amash having to put out a message going, hey, you know, I need more money. These guys are trying to destroy me. And you go, well, I'm not from that district. So the hell what? It's your country at risk here with these people.
Well,
you know,
and you're frustrated.
Send a donation.
Yep. No, I'm saying you're frustrated. Imagine how I feel. I have to live here amongst these people. It was the Yankee libtard invaders that are in Northern Virginia around the Imperial City that cost Ken Cuccinelli the race. It wasn't the rest of the Commonwealth. And now we've got a crook.
No, he won most counties.
Yeah, crook and a Clinton-affiliated criminal. Coming in as governor, and you think that it's just a minor
thing.
He's
still
under
investigation. That guy has investigations out on him, and he won? But that didn't tell you what's wrong in this country.
Well, it tells you how big a deal New Jersey and Virginia races are in odd years, because they show you what is going to happen in 2014. And what the rhinos exposed to you was that they are going to underfund the conservative and libertarian candidates in 2014 races, and they're going to fund primaries against them, and they are going to fund those that are being primaried, like Lindsey Graham, Nisty, Mitch McConnell, Bob Bailout Corker, and all these other jerk-offs. You have to counter that, and you can. Don't think it's some kind of futile effort. It's not some kind of quixotic event. We can make the difference. But it only happens if you remain positive, you remain resolute, you create a force multiplier and get more people involved. Don't split the vote. If you've got two conservatives that are thinking about running against a rhino, you're going to split the vote with those two. The rhino's going to get it. Rally behind the most conservative one and beat the rhino. That's how you have to – you got to think strategic. Remember something. Karl Rove and the Conservative Victory Project and this other one, Main Street USA or whatever the hell they call it, these are well-organized machines designed to keep conservatives and libertarians out of the Republican Party. You have to counter that, and you have to think strategically and tactically. There's over, 600 races that you got to keep your eye on, so you can't do everything, but there are a few key ones, especially the ones at home in your state, because you know those better than anybody else. But there are key ones like getting rid of Graham Nistick, getting rid of Bailout Bob Corker, getting rid of Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, Eric Cantona, supporting Justin Amash in his bid, Trey Gowdy.
These are the things that you have to get involved in, and don't send a penny to the Republican Party. They will use it against you. Send it directly to the candidate whom you vetted to be genuinely a constitutionalist, a conservative, and or libertarian. And let's be clear about something. The libertarians in the Republican Party are not, you know, proponents of pot smoking and sodomy as their first two items. Those are like item, you know, 159 or 160 on the list. We're talking about the Fed, the NSA, the wars. That's what we're focused on. You have to learn to get along with people who you don't agree with on every issue. That means for you libertine libertarians, you got to learn to get along with your Christian brothers and sisters, even though they're theistic and you might be more hedonistic. And you Christians, you're going to have to make common cause with some of these people who don't necessarily think like you do, because the other ones are really the enemy. And if they win, we all lose. Now, let's be clear about something. If you're a libertarian and you believe in freedom, so if people are different, you got nothing against them. And if you're a Christian, you believe that what you know is the truth, you share it with other people. You can't force it upon them. They have to accept it themselves. In the meantime, y'all can get along, because the other enemy is very organized, very entrenched, and it's going to take away your religious freedom, your economic freedom, your constitutional freedom, and put you under the boot. And if you don't stop them you'll be too late. Go ahead.
Well, I was just—I haven't done the research on it, but I have followed it. But you look at the number of corporations that have moved out of the U.S. market, and I don't think people understand this, but there's a lot of money and power that now exists outside of the United States. And what made the United States great after the Second World War was, you know, the whole damn world was blown up and our factories were intact. So, you know, when our soldiers came home, they turned those factories into production and they started producing things. We became this industrial giant. Well, that industrial giant is gone. It's all over the world. And a lot of it's in China, and a lot of the corporations are outside of this country. Yeah, they still have, you know, business interests here. There's still some corporations here, but, you know, they're running away, and they've been doing it for a long time and doing it for decades, you know. And so we're at this pinnacle where recovery, you know, this kind of pulls back to economics, but politics is very important in this. You know, we're at this pinnacle where, you know, for us to recover, we really need that machine that we used to have, and we don't have it anymore. So it's even more important that these people get their crap together politically, economically, in the government, because it's going to come a point in time where there's a point of no return. And being, you know, producing oil because of North Dakota ain't going to solve all of our economic problems. We have trillion-dollar problems, or $100 trillion if you want to look at the bigger picture, of unfunded liabilities. I mean, Medicare alone is $35 trillion. They have no idea where the hell they're going to get it. I mean, you know.
Illegal aliens.
Print it? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Undocumented Democrats and print it. Print strong, yelling, yeah. Print strong.
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not,
the woman who didn't predict the crash, isn't that great to know that she's going to be head of our finances? Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, she's the mouthpiece. No, she's the mouthpiece. The head is whoever owns the New York Federal Reserve. But besides the point, we're 50 minutes into the second hour, and about 45 minutes we are going to lose our live listeners. I have no idea how many of you there are because I can't even see the console. But if you want to listen to the show after midnight on the East Coast, you're going to have to call in and listen on your phone. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Before we get into the next Schiff clip, because Schiff happens on this show, I just want to point out that Schiff is often interviewed on Fox Noise, principally the Fox Business Noise as opposed to the Fox, quote, news noise, the no-spin, fair and balanced news noise. And they usually hammer and come out against him and berate him and denigrate him. And then guess what? He turns out to be right. Oh, imagine that. The Austrians are always right, because the Austrian school is based on human action as opposed to the Keynesian school, which is based on mathematics. Wealth are not math. Money and wealth are tools, property used by human beings. And the problem with people who think like Keynesians is, in order to control the mathematics of macroeconomics, they have to control the masses of human beings. So in order to make their economic numbers work, they have to manage you. Now, if you're one of the cogs that does what you're supposed to do, you go into debt to get an education that's useless, you get a job that underpays you, you overspend, you charge up your shit you don't need, then they're totally fine with you, and you keep paying your taxes, and you buy your Obamacare health insurance. But if you do something to be a good steward of your money, to start a business, to be creative, to try to help people, then they're going to come after you because you are a bad cog in the machine. That's what you're facing. And don't look to the Republicans as your saviors, because they are not. They are part of the problem. And remember something. The Federal Reserve was created by Woodrow Wilson on December 23, 1913. But it was a Republican bill that passed Congress. Thank you.
Hey, I was just going to tell you that your phone was breaking up a little bit on that last dialogue. So if you're wandering around, don't go back to that place.
Well, I was wandering around, but then my battery got low, so now I'm tethered. It's really frustrating.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a walker when I'm walking and talking, except when I got a computer on my lap. Yeah, I think that, you know, you're nailing it. And I just hope that we are simple enough in our message that it helps educate people, because that's the goal. You know, I don't want to talk over the top of anybody. I want to help people. I've spent most of my life in education positions. You know, I've taught debt-free and sound economics for most of my life, and it's important. We live in a society. I mean, I look at my parents. I remember when they got their first credit card and how afraid of it they were. You know, if they ever bought anything, they'd save up money and buy it. Very seldom did they ever borrow money. They just came from a different world. Of course, they grew up in the Depression. But in a very short time, a generation or two, you know, you look at the average debt load on the average American, and it's terrible. You know, we consume on debt. It was one thing, if you go back a couple generations, they might have bought a house. If they bought a car, they'd pay it off in a year, 2 years. I mean, now, 5-year loans or lease cars and never own them, you know, just a total money right down the hole. But unless it's a business, you can write it off. But this is all important stuff, because it's all coming to a head, and they haven't fixed crap. And I think that's a part of what we're trying to get across, and definitely what Peter Schiff, I mean, the guy speaks on multiple, I mean, he's a guest on every financial show that I can find. You know, I find stuff all over the place. And, you know, he talks about it. So we'll roll right into this if you're ready.
Go for it.
What the Fed did is blow some air back into the deflating bubble. But I think the fundamentals for the U.S. economy are much worse than they were when the Fed began QE1. And you still have this idea that the Fed can, you know, remove these supports and that the economy can somehow continue expanding on its own. It can't. It's all a function of that cheap money and the artificially low interest rates that come with it, because our whole economy in the U.S. is based on debt. It's based on borrowing to consume, borrowing to speculate. The government is financing itself based on debt. All these checks that they're mailing out are based on debt. And the rates need to be practically zero in order for anybody to afford to even service the debt. That's how enormous the debt is. And when the Fed eventually lets interest rates rise, everything comes crashing back down, much worse than 2008, which is why I think the Fed is not going to allow rates to rise. It's going to continue to expand quantitative easing until it can't do it anymore. And what finally will stop the Fed will be a crash of the dollar. That hasn't happened yet. In fact, the dollar strengthened this week against the euro. The Europeans decided to cut interest rates to generate more inflation in Europe, which buys the U.S. a little bit more time because it allows us to inflate inflate more because the dollar now has a little bit of support against the euro. I don't think it will last. I think the dollar is headed lower. But at some point, the market will figure out the box the Fed's in, and it won't want to hold the dollar. It will realize that it's QE infinity. And when the dollar really starts to come under pressure, if it loses 10, 20% or more of its value against, a basket of currencies, big currencies, that's when the Fed is going to have to make a choice, a very difficult choice that it has been avoiding for years, which is going to be to dramatically increase interest rates, even if the unemployment rate is rising, and even though it's going to force many banks into failure, even though it might force the government to default on its debt, even though it's going to bring out a very severe recession, the Fed's going to have to raise rates anyway and start selling treasuries, not buying them. Or if it doesn't have the integrity or the courage to do that, then it's going to print even more money, and then the dollar is going to crash. And that is going to be a much worse financial crisis than had they let rates go up.
Okay.
Because then we have runaway inflation, and it doesn't matter that your bank didn't fail because your deposits have no value. Because it's the dollar that's crashed.
Do we ultimately need to take hits by writing these asset values down and getting some banks closed? Like, what are the hits that people need to take in order for us to kind of...
Well, yeah, we have to realize that asset prices are too high.
Properties.
Property stock. Prices are too high. Stock prices are too high. They have to come down. But the Fed's policy is aimed at keeping them inflated. And what they want is to try to make it easy for Americans to borrow money to overpay for houses, instead of letting housing prices come down so that people can actually afford them without taking on all that debt. People would need interest rates to be so low if housing prices went down. But you need these artificially low interest rates to sustain the artificially high house prices. But that's what the government is concerned about. When they talk about deflation, there's a worry about deflation, they don't really mean prices coming down for consumer goods. That's what everybody thinks about. All they care about is asset prices. So when the Fed is worried about deflation, they're worried about the stock market coming down or the real estate market coming down. They're not worried about the price of food coming down or the price of gas coming down, because those prices aren't coming down. They're going up. And it would be a relief for everybody if consumer prices were actually able to come down. But the government's got everybody convinced that we need inflation, that inflation is good for the economy. It's not. The government needs inflation to sustain asset bubbles, and they need inflation to wipe out the value of their liabilities, of their debt, because what inflation does do is reduce the value of what you owe by allowing you to repay it in cheaper money. That's what the Fed is trying to create inflation for, not to help out the economy or to help out the consumer. They would actually benefit from falling prices, as would people who want to buy homes. If you want to buy a house, if the Fed got out of the way, house prices would collapse. Homes would be more affordable, right? Keeping real estate prices artificially high doesn't help you. In fact, in America, I think home ownership rate is now at like a 20-25-year low because people can't afford to buy homes because they're still too expensive.
Okay. Alessio, what's your take on this?
Actually, first of all, I want to say it's a great honor to be sitting next to Peter Schiff because I'm familiar with his work. One of the things which people who may not be familiar with Peter Schiff is you accurately called it in 2006. I think it's a video people should actually go and find on YouTube where Peter, I love watching this video. I don't know if you've seen it, Brian.
Tell me.
Basically, in 2006, Peter, you on what I'm talking about. You're having a debate with Arthur Laffer on CNBC, and he was saying, "Oh, the economy has never been in better shape." And you said, "You actually accurately, these are your words, that it's a phony wealth. The real estate bubble is going to burst, and all that wealth is going to evaporate." And the funniest thing in that video, which people should watch, is on Fox News the same year, in 2006, you said the house prices are unsustainable, speculative buyers will turn to sellers, banks will tighten up credits, everything which happened, by the way. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is everyone on that show on Fox News was laughing at Peter because, it's unbelievable how people were in this mindset of a bubble. They were saying, house price is going to go up to 10%, but Peter accurately was saying, no, you're going to see a house price crash. And then the next year, 2007, the funniest part of that video is that in 2007 on Fox News, they have this end of the year stock picks. Mm-hmm. So everyone's saying, yeah, I'm going to buy Merrill Lynch, I'm going to buy Goldman Sachs. And then Peter says, forget financial stocks, they're going to crash, and instead buy gold. And that's exactly what happened in 2008.
Gotcha. Buy gold.
It's silver. Either one. It's amazing how, I mean, I find it to be clear and succinct. Maybe everybody does it, but learn what he's talking about because he makes sense.
Yeah. Do you want me to talk? Is that what you're stalling for?
Go for it.
Well, I my recommendation is that if you don't understand what he was just talking about, then you need to learn it because this is not higher economics. This is just basic fundamentals in why this country is continually in the mess it's in and what's coming. You know, I'm always wondering sometimes, you know, I think about what we talk about or what we write or what we post on the groups or what we talk about on the shows, you know, and some of the stuff if people think we're some kind of crazy conspiracy theory people. And I'm thinking, no, this is basic fundamental economics and it's real. And what Schiff is talking about, you know, that if they quit printing, there's going to be a correction, and there's going to be some problems, but it will force the government to quit overspending. I mean, it's terrible. Our annual budget in this country is just out of control. It's like three times higher than it was during the Bush administration, even with wars. I mean, think about that. That means they are propping up every segment of our society right down to people's ability to go to the store and buy food. While they're telling everybody the stock market's up and it's wonderful and unemployment's down, it's all bull crap. You know, we look at some of the things that I just don't hear anybody talking about until it kind of happens and then it moves on. Taxes were raised. They just passed 141 new regulations in the first couple days of the year. More regulations to clamp down on enterprise and business and expansion and development and resources, 141. The debt ceiling, the moment that the Republicans caved after the so-called shutdown, which was not a shutdown, you know, like, what, 27% or something? Stupid,
17.
Ridiculous number. 17%, sorry. they folded, gave President Obama carte blanche, and he raised the debt in one day over $400 billion. Over $400 billion in one day. While you're getting ready to party, $125 billion, both Republicans and Democrats, okay?
Because there is no debt ceiling. It's gone until February 7th.
Yeah.
Obama does whatever the F he wants to do. That's
and we did a show on this.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the other point is, and the one that nobody, and you would think that Fox would at least get this right, is that look at all the new 13, 14, 18, 21, who the hell knows, he changes the law at will, new taxes that are implemented on Obamacare in 2014. So we had tax increases, fees and regulations. We just had another tax increase in the airlines. Okay, they call it a fee. It's bull crap because it doesn't go to the airlines. It goes to the general fund. So it's a tax. So it's just a play on words. And then you got all the Obamacare taxes coming down at the same time. Do you honestly think this crap is going to help the economy that's been stalled for 5 years? There has been no dynamic growth in any sector except the stock market, which is fake money. It's all that printed money. You know, the Fed prints it, the Treasury. There's a great video, and I should find it and post it. But basically, you know, the Fed prints it, the Treasury prints bonds, the Fed buys it. It's just this cycle. And then the major financial institutes get a hold of that money, no interest paid on it. And then they play with it. It goes into the stock market. It stays at the upper level. Most of the printed money that was supposed to be printed to help us, the economy, so to speak, has never made it down in the economy yet. You haven't even seen inflation hit yet. When all this stuff comes unraveled, like Schiff talks about, and he's careful not to sound like, you know, his hair's on fire and he's going to scare the hell out of everybody, but all this stuff is going to unravel sooner or later, whether it's 2014, 2015, 2016. I'm not a soothsayer. But you're going to pay the price for it. And the rich, the uber-rich, have made a bloody fortune during this process. And most of those are the same people got us here in the last crash. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, having the Federal Reserve fabricate money in order to help us is like saying that I feel more secure on the street because I'm surrounded by muggers. I mean, it's insane. Okay, basically, it's like saying that, you know, to keep my virtue, I'm going to go hang out with rapists. You know, it doesn't make any sense. These are the people that are robbing you. These are the people that are limiting your liberties. These are the people that are blowing up the world in your name, and they say they're to help you. They're going to keep unemployment low. One out of four Americans is underemployed or unemployed. They're going to keep inflation low. Well, let me tell you something. Inflation has never been higher. Of course, when you can borrow from the Fed at near 0% and lend it to the federal government at 3%, then you're not going to circulate that money. You're just going to make a 300% profit taking no risk. And that's what the banks are doing. But at some point, rates will rise. The Fed cannot perpetually keep rates down. They're using every button, every lever, every tool they've got to keep rates artificially low, to keep propping up Wall Street and to keep floating this paper economy and the industrial war machine and the pharmaceutical, healthcare insurance complex. But at some point, the rates will rise. And when that happens, the money gets what in Keynesian terms is called velocitized, and it gets pumped into the economy. And that's when you start seeing gas at $12 a gallon, milk at $15 a gallon, bread at $1 million. Oh, Rex, that's impossible. Bread can't be $1 million a loaf. Sure it can. When you're making $2 trillion a year, bread's $1 trillion. I mean, there are literally $100 trillion bills in Zimbabwe. They print $100 trillion bills. They print them on only one side of the bill because they can't afford the ink for the other side. You think that can't happen here? You're out of your mind. It can happen here. It will happen here at some point, unless you go in for a soft crash landing instead of a managed decline. And the only way that's going to happen is if you elect people with balls, you stand on top of them, you stand with them, and you make sure they're going to do their job, and you put this damn federal government back in its constitutional box, and you pick up your own slack. Quit looking for a handout. You know, some people really need one, and you better be there to help them. But if you don't need one, don't take one. Stand up. Do something. Rebuild your country. Take it back, and don't let the banksters and the corrupt politicians have a criminal government that gets its hands and tentacles into every aspect of your life. And don't go arguing with committed progressives who like big government. You're not going to convert them. Until the wheels come off this thing, they are convinced that whatever the problem is, the government is the answer. But that makes them at odds with you. Don't even waste your time going after them. There are, 114 million people that didn't vote in the last presidential election, Chris? 114 million people. Now, I guarantee you the majority of them are conservative/libertarian Americans. That's who you got to go get. That's who you've got to wake up. Wake up the sleeping giant. Like Chris says, it doesn't take that much more in numbers. If you just get three more people a week from now until November involved and active to go support real conservatives and real libertarians, this will make 2010 look like a little girl's tea party. That's what will happen. That's up to you. You have to make it happen.
Yeah. I think about all this stuff, and sometimes I can see how it can be a little overwhelming to people. But if you don't start educating yourself now, it's going to get a lot more overwhelming. You think 2008 was bad. 2008 is going to be nothing. And I'm always wary when I speak like that because I think, oh, man, people are thinking I'm, going off the deep end. But I've lived enough years. I grew up, my grandparents were adults in the Depression. My parents were kids in the Depression. I've been through multiple recessions. I've seen, wealth disappear. I've felt it disappear a couple times in my life. So it's very real to me. And if you got a good government job, maybe it's not that real to you. But if you're out here in the marketplace trying to do business or you work in free enterprise, it's real. And we saw in the 90s, if it wasn't for the dot-com explosion, the Internet and all these mega corporations, Microsoft and Cisco and all these big companies, we had no economy at that point in time because all the corporations were fleeing America to go build factories in China and Malaysia and Indonesia and the Philippines and South Vietnam and, all these other places because they were so overregulated and so overtaxed that they were running. So we had factories already fleeing America. And then we had the explosion of the Internet and all the companies that, built these mega wealth around it and a whole new level of wealth. And at the same time, on the side was this building housing bubble. And so our whole economy shifted from a manufacture, produce things, sell things, export things around the world to a country of soft finance, so to speak. Investment bankers and all these people sitting on all this cheap money during this boom, so-called boom time. I remember the Clinton era going into the dot-bomb crash. And so we've experienced that. And then we just experienced this one in 2008, and the correction has not come. And I got to say that over and over again because when the correction is like Peter Schiff was saying, I'd rather have it now, as ugly as it's going to be and painful as it's going to be, than to have it with the dollar crashing. Because and this goes back to, to jump internationally, when more and more and more and more countries no longer buy our debt, number one, and number two, no longer use the U.S. trade dollar, all that economy comes back to us. All that money comes back to us. So, and I don't, maybe you can explain what inflation is. It's so simple, but I don't think a lot of people understand it.
That's why it's so tricky, because it's so simple. Think of it this way. One thing you and I complain about all the time, trying to put on a two-hour weekly amateur blog talk radio conservative talk show, and sometimes we can't even get the technology to work like today, but we don't have enough time. There's not enough time to do it. We got our family responsibilities, work, and then we're trying to do this quixotic try to save the country ploy, but imagine if all of a sudden you and I woke up tomorrow morning and instead of 60 minutes in an hour, we had 120 minutes in an hour. Whoa, Rex, that's awesome. You just doubled the amount of time I have per hour to get my work done. Well, no, because the planet's still going to revolve around the sun at the same speed. All we've done is increase the quantity of minutes in an hour. So each minute is now worth half as much as it was before because there's twice as many of them, but it's still the same hour. And that's what they do with your money. They print more. So suddenly you go, wow, they just printed $1 trillion, so we're $1 trillion richer. No, the economy didn't grow by $1 trillion. We just increased the quantity of money by $1 trillion. That is called counterfeiting. It is faking the money. Now, if you're the counterfeiter and you just fabricated this money, you're living high on the hog because it didn't cost you anything. And now you got $1 trillion. You can go out and buy $1 trillion worth of stuff. But once you hand that money over to whoever you buy stuff from and they use it to transact business and so on and so forth, it dilutes the total amount of money. And everybody other than the counterfeiter and those who first got the money is poorer for it. The only people who benefit are those who create the money, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and those closely affiliated with them, the federal government, the state governments, and the contractors and corporations that are in bed with them, like Big Pharma and the military-industrial complex. That is how dangerous this is. Every time they counterfeit money, you just got robbed. invisibly. It's worse than a tax because you don't see it, you can't account for it. It's worse than being mugged, because at least when you get mugged, you know, you had your wallet, the guy kicks your ass, he takes your wallet, you open up your wallet, you say, I have $300 in my wallet, now I got zero, I'm $300 less wealthy. But the way that the Federal Reserve does it is they leave the three Benjamin Franklins in your wallet, they just make them worth $250 instead of $300. That's the insidious nature of this beast, and right now, better go to Rand Paul's website, sign the Audit the Fed petition, get 10 other people to sign it, and then call Congress and make them audit this damn thing. Now, I know some purists out there saying, well, I audit it. We just need to abolish it. I agree. I think we need to end the Fed, but you can't end it overnight. I mean, it might end overnight when the whole thing comes off its wheels, but you got to phase it out if you want to have a soft crash landing, but you will never have the political will to do it until the majority of Americans understand that they're being robbed. And they won't until it's audited. That help?
Wow.
I don't know if I...
Yeah, that was beautiful. I, you know, sometimes it's even overwhelming to me, and I get it. You know? I mean, holy moly, baby. You know, I was, I watched a couple... Go ahead. What?
I was just agreeing with you. It is overwhelming.
Oh, okay. You were just mumbling. You know, I'm looking for that video. I'm going to post it in chat if I can ever find it, because our financial thread on Coalition of Freedom is, you know, up to about 500-600 posts again.
You're the one we're playing, the Peter Schiff one?
No, it was the one. It was that one that was the guy did that documentary explaining what the Fed was. Remember that one? It was just really clean, very professional. And
I'll post it again.
Perfect.
I have it. When I get back on the net, I'll post it on the group.
Yeah, because that was a great – I really think that some of it for the majority of people is just lack of understanding, and some of it's fear, you know, and understandably so. And it's not something to fear. America has gone through tough times before, and it's going to go through tough times again. The question is how bad are they going to be? Now – And this gets a little over the deep, and I got to be careful how I explain this, but there is a group of people in this country, most of them are on the left, but not all of them, that want a world government. They think that America needs to be a state inside of a larger government around the world. Now, this is not conspiracy theory. This is fact, and you can do the research. Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of crazy people like to, you know, turn into a, you know, crazy conspiracy theory, and they sound like nuts. But there's a lot of fact in even in what they're saying. And so one of the things, besides the UN and Agenda 21 and all those other dynamics, one of the main things that will cause America to become a state and a larger entity is to bring us down. Okay, there's an actual plan, and they revel in the struggle and the economic downturn of this country, because it moves it closer to a reality. Now, for many, many, many years, we were the wealth of the world, the biggest country, the biggest economy, the biggest everything. And, you know, but compared to the whole world economy, which is about $100 trillion economy, you know, we're just a piece of that pie. And the bigger these countries get around the world, and the more they move into second world or even competitive with us in their economies, the greater chance they have of equalizing everything out, which means they get closer to their goal. So it really boils down to, do you want to remain a prosperous, sovereign nation with maximum freedom and opportunity, or do you want to be a state of a bigger world government? Because that's the direction we're going. And if we crash, like what Peter Schiff is talking about, then there are people already set up to put a new economic system in place, and we would just be a piece of everybody else. And it's over, you know, as you know it. Is it over like the end of the world? Whatever. But it definitely, everything you knew, believed, loved about this country is over at that point. So that's the part that of the conversation that Schiff is not really getting into. I'm sure if you got him off on the side, he'd have a conversation about that, because I think he gets it, you know, especially being in Austrian economics and also looking at his investment profiles and portfolios and where he invests and who he trusts, you know, with other people's money or his own. So, you know, that's the reality. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, we've heard this for decades, for a long time. And if you look at the formation of the UN, or you even go back to coming out of the First World War with the first experimentation of a pre-UN, you know, we've had these people have had this vision of a world government. Now the question, I think that the difference between some on the right and the left is there are people who both believe that. It's just there are people who believe that we are the center, and then there's people like Barack Obama who believe we need to be a piece of somebody else's center. That's really what it boils down to.
Yep.
Are you there?
I mean, yeah, I'm here. I mean, you know, is it a conspiracy? Well, conspiracies are real. Is every conspiracy theory that you hear on the Internet real? No, most of them are complete crap, and I'd argue that half of them are planted there by the conspiracists themselves. But grab your tinfoil hat and put it on, because conspiracies do happen. And sometimes it doesn't have to be the Illuminati meeting around a dark table in one of their Masonic rites.
Or aliens.
Yeah, or aliens, okay? It could just simply be that these people have a community of interests that line up. They might not even know each other. But if they're trying to rip you off and control your behavior and get your wealth, and they know that they need the power of government to do it, and they find a politician who's sympathetic or a banker who thinks like they do, they'll work together even without conscious conspiracy. The simple fact is the power structure is always between liberty and tyranny. It is never a static line. It is always in battle. And the fact is that there are always more people, the masses who crave liberty, than there are the oligarchs who control us. The problem is that sometimes we don't know that we have power. We don't know that we have rights. We don't know that we can act differently because we allowed ourselves to be corrupted. Get yourself uncorrupted. Get your head on right.
Mm-hmm.
That means that understand what the real principles of human liberty are. It isn't do whatever the hell you want to do. It is do what you ought to do. It is fulfill and become who you were made to be. And understand economics. Now, it's the dismal science, a subject you might not really want to get into. I don't want to get into politics. I don't want to talk about politics. I'm sick of talking about politics. I'm sick of talking about corrupt politicians. I'm sick of talking about blowing up the Middle East. I'm sick and talking about this crap. But I lost my light bulb. My toilet doesn't flush right. I'm paying too much in taxes. I don't have as much money as I did yesterday, even though numerically I have more today than I did yesterday. It's worth less. I can't
ignore
politics.
They want to take my gun.
Yeah, they want to take my guns. They want to make me wait in line to register and pay a fee for a registered weapon. I mean, it's insane. Every time I turn around, I'm facing politics, and it really pisses me off, and it sucks. But here's the simple thing. Economics is not that hard, but you have to understand it, because if you don't understand the economics behind this, they're going to keep controlling you, and you're not going to be able to get other people excited enough to do something about it. Look at what happened when Baba Wawa sicked the entire left-stream media on Phil Robertson from Duck Dynasty. You rose up. Hey, that's great. Okay, now what, you're going to go back to sleep because he's back on his million-dollar show? No, you got to fight for more stuff. So go to Mises.org, and you can get a free copy. It's a PDF. Read Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. That there is enough for you to say that you are more of an economic expert than all the idiots in Washington, D.C., and all the idiots on Wall Street. And to follow up on that, read Ron Paul's End the Fed. It's very accessible. It's very simple. You can go deeper if you want to. He has a reference of all the sources there. Or you can just leave it at that. That's enough information that you need to know what's going on. That's it. Do those two things and get three other people to do it and call and support Rand Paul's Audit the Fed. You're on your way. And then just keep doing something every week from now until November, and you watch what happens. I know we're running out of time. We'll get into the next clip. But I just want everybody to understand something. Our failure and our success, it's up to you. It's up to you. Don't look to the other guy. You do it. And then you look to the other guy and you say, hey, you need to do it too. Right? That's how it's done. And it's because you love your country, you love your liberty, you love your freedom, and not everybody in the country has to agree with you or be like you or live like you. That's what liberty is about. Do your thing, man, but leave me alone.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, I got a good idea. I'm going to give this number out, 646-649-1013. The top of the hour, anybody listening on the browser, you're going to be cut off. It's just the way Blog Talk Radio is. But we're still live, but you got to call in. And you can go ahead and call in. I'm not going to call on you and bug you and all that kind of stuff. But that way you can catch, because sometimes our best part of our show is that last 10, 15 minutes when we go overtime. Anyway, let me go ahead and play the clip, Rex, because it'll take us right to the top of the hour, and then we can comment on the other half, and hopefully people get called in.
Gold has a use. I mean, gold is a valuable metal that serves all of the required functions of money. That's why gold became money. No, gold didn't become money because some politician said we're going to be on a gold standard. Gold was money before any politicians ever came around. I mean, kings, they just recognized gold as money or silver as money because that's what was being used in commerce because it worked. Yeah. But when governments realize that they can seize control of the money and they could just declare paper to be money, they did it. Because it allowed them to confiscate the wealth of their citizens.
Right.
But free people want real money. You don't want your government to steal your money by debasing the currency. And, before they even had paper money, the way they would debase the currency, which is where the word comes from, is they would take the precious metal out of the currency and they would put base metal in the coin. And you would know that your money was being debased.
Yeah, as a matter of fact,
I just want to ask Peter really quickly about, you do a radio show every week, and you talked about earlier when you ran for Senate, you weren't getting the calls that you would normally got from the media. And I'm just wondering what you think of independent media, which I guess is what you do every week, and the normal, Fox News, the typical stuff you see promoting Wall Street. Are they diverging? Do you think the regular media gives a fair shake to Wall Street? What's your thought?
Well, I think the regular media bends over backwards to help Wall Street out and to help perpetuate the myths that benefit Wall Street. But I think the best source of information right now in the media, real information, is the alternative media. There's a lot of good stuff on the Internet. You just have to look for it. Unfortunately, most people don't know where to look, and so they never come across it. But I started doing my radio show partially for that reason. After the Senate run was over, I started Schiff Radio, and you can listen to it. We're syndicated in the U.S., but you can listen anywhere in the world at schiffradio.com, and I do the show for 2 hours a day.
A day.
And I take calls, so if you listen live, you can call in, or you can just listen anytime. But I know I have people listening to this show all around the world. And I'm trying to get this information out there because I know if you rely on conventional sources of media, you're going to get disinformation. You're going to get a lot of regurgitated government propaganda.
You think it's unintentional on their part? I mean, are they complicit or do they just do what's in their best interest?
It's probably a little of both.
Okay.
I would say there's a famous phrase that says, I've always said this, there are two types of information. Information for the masses and information for the classes. And I would urge people to actually find out, is the information am I getting, is it information for the masses or the classes?
These classes.
I would say yes, absolutely.
And you do 2 hours every weekday, and you just talk you talk markets and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would say...
You should do a show.
Is there a third class, though? For the asses? Or is that the masses? Or are the asses and the masses synonymous?
But I mean, going back to, I'm glad you brought this up with the whole media thing. Going back to when you were standing your ground before the financial, before the crisis, in 2006, when you were on CNBC, when you were on Fox, and you were saying, no, there's going to be a recession, there's going to be a crash, and everybody was laughing at you, because I remember everybody was laughing at me. Because when people are in such a bubble-minded state, people say, the house price is going to go up 10%, stocks are going to go up, buy stocks, buy housing. I mean, what were you thinking? What were you thinking to yourself? Because I was thinking, I'll be honest with you, when you're the only voice standing away from the crowd, when the herd is saying, when the herd is going one way, following the media, following the financial pundits and all this kind of stuff, and when there's one voice maybe speaking reason, like you did in 2006. Do you ever doubt yourself? Do you ever say, you know what, maybe the herd is right?
It's a good question, actually.
I
mean, it's a good question.
I
don't, you doubt yourself maybe a little bit. I mean, because I went through that experience with the dot-coms, and I was confident that most of these stocks would go bankrupt, and I refused to buy them. And for a while, yeah, I looked pretty foolish, and then I was vindicated when they collapsed. And so I had, you know, I had lived through that, you know, arguing with people. I had a lot of arguments with people I knew, friends and family members, about the dot-com stocks, where people thought I was a fool. And so when I had those arguments a few years later, in many cases with the same people over real estate, at least I felt a little, you know, empowered by having been right about this dot-coms. But they didn't seem to notice that. They just seamlessly moved from one bubble to another without missing a beat. And they still couldn't understand that I was right. But I'm still confident that now, you know, it's my prediction still. I mean, you still have people that are listening to things that I'm saying and still act like I didn't get anything right in the housing market. I'm just, how could you think this way? This is crazy. Yeah. You're a fool. And all they want to say is, well, you got lucky on the housing market. You just were a stop clock. And so, you know, you were right twice a day or whatever it is.
Yeah. That is complete nonsense, because if people just look at this extremely bullish sentiment. You know,
but the other thing, though, you have to look at, if you look at what I was saying and writing in 04, 05, 06, and that's easy to do. It's all on the internet. Mm. I mean, you can't say I just got lucky, because I was very precise in my explanation of what the problem was, what was causing it, how it was going to unwind. It wasn't like I just said house prices are going to come down, and then they finally did. In fact, you can look at my mortgage banker speech, which is the one I thought you were talking about when you mentioned 2006. But this is a typical talk that I gave. This was to mortgage bankers in 2006. There were 3,000 of them. And I made some of the same points the year earlier, which is why they invited me back. But if you have an hour to kill, you know, go to YouTube and go to Peter Schiff Mortgage Bankers and watch that speech from fall of 2006. Everything that happened in 2008, I laid out in that speech.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the first time I said it. I've been saying it for years. It finally happened.
Yeah.
You know.
And going forward, I mean, now we're in the subject. I mean, going forward, 2014, do you feel that the same level of, you know, if we're in a bubble, because let's face it, stock markets are just, you know, going higher. There's no end in sight. And again, as you said back in 2006, and the fundamentals do not support this rising stock market. Or the bubble we're in London, is that there's a housing bubble in London right now. I spoke to my mortgage broker only a few months ago and said, don't buy a house in London now. It's a bubble.
Prices went up 10% last month or something.
That's right. I mean, again, the fundamentals do not support these rising house prices in London or in the stock market.
Yeah, I think it's all part of the same bubble. You know, I mean, the Fed's been blowing it for years and years, and every once in a while part of it bursts. First the stock market, housing market, the Fed keeps blowing more air in and reflates them. You know, the bubble is in the bond market, in the U.S. Treasury bond market. There's a bubble in the U.S. dollar. But it's all part of the same bubble. And eventually, it's going to burst for good. And there's the Fed is not going to be able to reflate it at all, and the air is going to come out. And then people are going to see, obviously, you know, how bad the situation is. I mean, you know, when you're talking about, you know, during the housing bubble, when I was pointing out some of the absurdity of what was going on in the mortgage market with the zero down and the negative AM and the liar's loans and the securitization process. No, but people thought that I was nuts for even thinking that it was a problem.
Right.
The things that everybody now agree were a problem, nobody found them problematic at the time. But now, of course, it's obvious. And now you've even got Fed officials coming out and saying, oh, yeah, well, the housing bubble was obvious. Believe me, it wasn't obvious at the time. It was obvious to me, but to the powers that be, to the masses, it was completely not obvious.
Bernanke and Greenspan themselves were in denial about it. Yeah.
The problems that we have today, to me, are even bigger and more obvious than the housing bubble. Yet fewer people can actually spot it. But after it all collapses, yes, the problems today will be as obvious as those problems in the housing market are now in hindsight. It's just that when you're in the bubble, the participants don't know it's a bubble. You know,
and also probably because
the definition of a bubble, isn't it?
And if you're invested in the market, you probably are so biased that you want, you know.
Yeah, and you know, the reason that so few people were able to make the same prediction that I did is because they didn't understand the problem.
Right.
They still don't understand it.
Are you there?
The difficulty. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey, I got a question for you before we go too far on. Did you call in on a different phone?
Yeah. I got everything fixed up.
Well, I kept this number kept popping
yeah,
up
that's me.
And being active, and I kept holding it, and then I got kicked out of chat because we can't both be on the same member login at the same time.
We can be with the moderator control, but anyway, we'll figure that out later.
Yeah, but anyway, I logged in under my trog because I finally figured out what the heck is going on here. Okay.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
All right. So we're good. All right. We got probably about 30 minutes to get this done. But that was very powerful stuff. And I think the biggest point is understand, okay, that with a little bit of education, and I'm talking about real simple stuff, a couple of YouTube videos from soundmoney.com or Mises, read Economics in One Lesson and Ron Paul's and the Fed, and you will understand how this works better than the fools trying to run it. Don't think that Janet Yellen or even Ben Bernanke are some kind of masters of the universe. They're really just over-credentialed dipshits. The real bosses are the ones who own the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. They're the ones who call the shots. This is just their mouthpiece. And these fools don't know that they can't manage this thing. That's why they don't see the booms and busts coming, even though their policies are the ones that create it. And so you have to understand how it works in order to fight it. You have to know your enemy. Otherwise, you can't win. You have to know why it's important that Rand Paul wants to audit the Fed and get other people to know why it's important. It involves itself in every aspect of your life. It isn't some kind of alien tinfoil hat conspiracy. This is a real banking cartel that has corrupted your government and controls your money. And, you talk about getting out of debt and not charging up on your credit cards and all that stuff. It's kind of a pointless discussion because the fact is you are in debt. If you have money, you're in debt. Look at your money. It says, the U.S. Treasury dollar, it says Federal Reserve note. A Federal Reserve that is not federal has no reserves, but that part that says note, that's true. It's a promissory note. Every piece of money you use is debt owed to the Federal Reserve upon which you pay interest in the way of inflation, which reduces the value of your dollar, and income taxation in order to keep their scheme going. Until you understand that, you won't get pissed off enough to put a stop to it. And if you do understand it, you can't fight it alone, and neither can Rand Paul. So get busy, grow the ranks.
Yeah, it's a heavy topic. I'm sitting here messing around trying to get this thing to work. Sorry, I got a little bit off focus there for a minute. it's really important to understand what's going on. I think that 2014 is a key element. If you want something simple to focus on, and let me add this one point. All the wars, it's all part of the same people. Okay, I mean, very few wars have been fought for really just reasons. I think a lot of people are very frustrated about what they saw in Iraq, Afghanistan. They kind of understood, but 12 years later, they're kind of like going, what the hell, is going on here? The United States is in over 100 countries. Africa's blowing up. It just seems like this never-ending thing. I mean, drones, we have like 7,000 of them now. People are getting killed. All this information is being buried in the media. If you don't research in international news, you wouldn't even think the world, was in bad shape. And it is. I mean, when was the last time you heard anything about Egypt in the news? When was the last time you heard anything? The only time you ever heard anything about Syria, period, was when they were going to go bomb it. But that war has been going on a couple years. And like I said, Africa's on fire right now, and, we're all over that, involved in things, involved in splitting governments and countries, and it just, if you want, you're never going to end it all. you know, and you're never going to have a perfect world. We're not supposed to, but that's another topic. But the thing is that all of this fake debt that is being heaped on your shoulders, your children's shoulders, your grandchildren's shoulders, your great-grandchildren that you haven't even had yet, is mostly to finance these wars. And that's really the tough one to finally come, you know, into clarity on, is that, oh, my God, what are we doing around the world? Because we're sure not. I mean, you show me one place. This is an important question. You show me one place in the country where we've interfered militarily that now has peace after we've pulled out or after we've interfered. And that's one where you have to step back and go, wait a second. Because one of the things about, you know, that we rode high on for a long time in the Second World War was the Second World War and that success of defeating fascism and Nazism and the Japanese and, you know, and of course, we blew the damn world up, but after we were done, it was rebuilding, and countries were formed, and economies were rebuilt, and our enemies became our friends, Germany, Japan, you know? And we rode on that for a long time as American exceptionalism. When we look at, you know, then we, of course, we went to Korea, but after that, it's just been a bloody-ass mess, nonstop. Whether you're Vietnam or South America or Iraq or Afghanistan, I mean, Afghanistan's in worse shape than it was, you know, when we got there. And now it's spilled over into Pakistan. You got Syria. You got all these countries around that, not to get off into too far into the Middle East. But all this crap's being paid for and all this blood and treasure off of the same dynamics that is occurring with our banking system and the Fed and our government. And that's their whole world. I mean, it's all they got. We've run our manufacturers off. We've regulated businesses to the point where they don't want to do business here anymore. You know, there's so many creative people that are like going, man, I'd love to start my own business, but how in the hell do you get past this crap? You got to make money. You know, you got to be able to pay your bills. You got to be able to pay yourself a wage before you can make your business successful. And so many people are so, dejected from that greatness that makes America so awesome. And all that is at risk with the people that you have in power in this country right now. You can't get away, you know, you see, like you were saying earlier, I don't like politics. It's all over your life, baby. You better freaking figure it out. And I don't like economics. Yeah, I don't like economics. Well, you better learn it because it's no longer a point where you can work and work for a company your whole life and retire and have a decent retirement. I mean, you got a president getting up there saying, I'm not going to send out Social Security checks if the Republicans don't raise debt.
Which is illegal.
You know? Yeah, but you see, that point right there, when you have people who can hold you hostage, your security, and not to mention Obamacare and your health, you know, your financial security and your health, that's all you got. If they take that away from you, and they've pretty much taken your financial security unless you can just bang through it and you start a business and you explode with that business, you know, and become wealthy. If you're a working class sucker in this country, good luck, because you're controlled. The debt load that's been stacked on your shoulders, and then you get into Obamacare, and that's a whole, like I say, it's a whole other conversation, but it's all about control. They control your money. They control your health. They control, you know, after you retire, you live in fear, never knowing. I mean, our soldiers, you know, going to war, becoming disabled, coming home, and now they get less. And they all get up there and go, well, everybody's got to feel the pain, but yet we don't reform government. You know, I mean, Senator Colburn puts out that waste and fraud report every year. That's billions of dollars of waste, not to mention we're triple the federal budget than we've ever been. There's got to be places you can cut, you know, that and take that money and take care of Americans. We're not taking care of our own people. You know, and this crap about Obamacare is for that, you know, X million of people who don't have insurance is bullcrap. It's about control, and it's going to cost people a lot more money, and I think a lot of people knew that. They were demonized if they spoke about it.
But they did cut.
Yeah.
Paul Ryan just cut $23 billion out of the budget over the next 10 years, in years 9 and 10.
Oh, yeah.
And by spending $65 billion right now. And, of course, like you mentioned, on New Year's Eve, we got that wonderful bit of debt.
$125 billion.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're a veteran, if you're a working class person, if you're on welfare because they've wiped out all the manufacturing jobs in your town, or if you're a relatively wealthy business owner. As long as your money is denominated in Federal Reserve notes, they could turn it off tomorrow. Now, they're obviously not necessarily going to do that, but at some point it's going to get turned off. It's all going to be worthless. That's where we're headed if we don't turn it around now. So instead of, look, this stuff can be pretty scary, and, you and I tend to probably obsess about it a little bit too much. It can be depressing. but here's the simple fact. When you're faced with something as daunting and complex and frightening as a total economic wipeout, you got two choices. You can run and hide, and then you'll be a victim. Or you can stand and fight. You might still be a victim, but you wouldn't have made yourself a victim. But if you fight and you get enough people to lock arms with you and fight, you can fix it. Human beings have this phenomenal capacity for survival. We can do things. In the worst situations, we can be our best. But only if you stand. Only if you stand and if you get others to do it. That's what this is about. This isn't about a Republican victory in the Senate and keeping the House. Who cares? This is about putting men and women in positions of temporary power to serve the common good of these United States, not the globalist agenda, not the corporatist interests, not themselves. And that's what it comes down to. Now, that's not going to happen if you are drawing these people from a corrupt populace. You have to be the light that rights the ship, and you have to find those who stand up. Look at how vilified Ted Cruz is. This is the junior senator from Texas who didn't even speak on the floor of the Senate until March of last year when he was assisting his friend, the junior senator from Kentucky, with his filibuster. And he's vilified. Why? Why is he so vilified? Because he ran in Texas on stopping Obamacare. That's why he was elected. And when he went there, that's what he did. The Republican leadership didn't want to do that. So they fought him, and the media vilifies him. And most of that information that comes out against him is not from Democratic operatives. It comes right out of the mouth of Karl Rove and Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. That's what you're up against. Now, getting a simple Republican victory won't do anything for you. You have to get a Republican majority, and you have to make that party more conservative and more libertarian and more constitutionalist. And the thing is that brass ring, that victory, is right there at your fingertips. This is the year you can do it, but not if you give up. Not if you get overwhelmed. Not if you get confused. And if you listen to Peter Schiff, some of the stuff he says can be pretty scary. But he also offers solutions. And that's what we're trying to do here. Chris and I are trying to show you how bad things are, because sometimes danger, fear, and loss are the most powerful motivators. But only if you take the solutions and run with them, you do a little bit every day. Don't whine and bitch about Obama. Don't whine and bitch about, they're trying to take my rights away. Well, yeah, obviously they are. What you need to do is positively engage others, show them the danger, and present them the solution. And the solution isn't supporting the Republican Party. The solution is supporting conservative, libertarian, and constitutional statesmen. This is the year you can do it. If you work hard at it, just a little bit every day.
Let me toss something in here. I don't promote the group very much. I know we speak about it, here and there. But when I built this group coming into the convention, all right, the Republican primary, Part of it was initially is I wanted to be able to research and a bunch of people I was friends with that wanted to have some conversations that we just couldn't seem to have on the political groups we were on. So I built this group. And I kept it very small because I wasn't interested in building some big group to feed my ego. It's a lot of work. It's a pain in the butt. And every day I get up going, yeah, I could just hit that button right there and it's over. You know? But, you know, I stick with it because there is people on there that want to learn. And that's really, I think, the difference. If you go to most groups, what you find, and I'm on a bunch of groups, people add you to crap all the time and plus place post the show. But, you know, I bounce around once in a while and I go to groups and I'm going, yeah, same old stuff, just everybody posting the news of the day, the anti-Obama thing, the conspiracy. And that's not what this group is about. Never has been, never was. I'm a research-driven person. I like to study. I like to research. When I have a weakness in knowledge, I want to learn, you know, so, and I post articles and information. Now, what we do is we have threads. And if, for people to understand what that is, that's, you know, you have a topic, whether it be Obamacare or finances or Syria or the Middle East or whatever, you know, pick your poison, you know, Common Core, whatever. And we build a picture so that you can identify the thread. And so if you go to the photo section, you can see all the pictures and you can go, oh, that's what I'm interested in, or I have something I want to post, or I have a comment or an article. And you just go to the picture, you click on it, and then you can access it, because we probably have about 25 different topics. And that's not by choice. That's just how much crap's going on in the country right now. And some of the things like, you know, the IRS and the NSA and, you know, they seem to be buried in the news, but they're still important and there's still things happening. So we have threads on those. But the goal of this group, at least from my perspective, is to educate people. So when you listen to our shows, and we go off and deep into these conversations, you know, whether it's politics or economics or whatever, or the Middle East or whatever our topic is for the night, and you're going, man, you guys know your stuff, and I don't know what you know. And Rex is saying you need to get out there and you need to impact three people. You know, you need to make a goal and need to educate people and engage them. Well, that's what I built the group for. And so that you can get involved and you have people who are members who are pretty sharp, and then you got Rex and I, you know, throwing our two bits in there, and the goal is to educate people, and some of it is just me educating myself and posting what I learned, and so that you can engage people. You know, we don't get caught up in the news of the day or the conspiracies, but we definitely have serious threads of information, and we stay on them. I mean, if you take the financial thread, that's like the fourth one I've built. You know, they get around 500, 600, 700, 800 comments and posts, and you move it, delete it, and you start a new one, you know, just to thin it down. And Obamacare, I'm on our third or fourth, or the NSA, probably the second or third one on that. So that's what that's for. I didn't build this thing because I needed to be the head of something, because I really couldn't give a crap. But I built it because I believe that people need an environment where they can learn the things that we talk about. If we, you know, it's really neat when people go, wow, that was a great show, and man, I wish I knew what you knew. And I'm thinking in my mind, I wish you knew what I knew, because then you'd be effective and you'd be impacting other people that I don't know that you can. And that's the goal, and that's what grassroots really is about. And that's why people form, you know, groups or clubs or whatever. As they get together, usually there's two or three people that really got their crap together. They stay on it. They revel in the learning of it. There's teachers, people who are, you know, who love to do that kind of stuff. And the goal is that you learn it, and then you go do something with it, whether it's your spouse or your kids or family members or people at work or people at the gym. You know, I mean, if every human being, you know, if 1,000 people all went out and impacted 5 people, that's 5,000 people. That's how grassroots grows. That's how multi-levels grow. That's how businesses grow. You know, it's people touching people, touching people, touching people. until it hits an exponential factor. That's what the Tea Party was about. And that's what 2014 can be, but it won't happen if people don't focus on things they can, that they want to learn. Number one, you got to want to learn it. And number two, you got to learn it. And none of it is difficult if you focus and learn. And that's, and if anything, that's, you know, that's why we built the group. So please join and engage, and don't just come posting a bunch of news of the day crap, because that's not what I built the group for. You know, get involved in the threads. You and I get in there and comment and post things and answer questions and all that kind of stuff. That's why we do it. I don't do this because I want to do it. I do it because I want to save my country. That's really what the bottom line is. And so anyway, I'm going to throw that, because I don't get into details on the group that much, because I figure people join or not. But we're coming into 2014. That group needs to grow. And then people need to learn, and then they need to...
What group is that?
Coalition of Freedom.
I didn't say it. So, no.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of give it a little tougher promotion, you know.
Good. Good. Well, when I say people need to do something, every day do something. And just think about the stuff that you piss away your time on daily. You know, watching some stupid reality TV show, watching Fox Noise. You know, I mean, look, don't waste your time on the quote no spin zone. So, you know, between 8 and 9, do something else. Promote the issue of liberty. Promote conservatism, and don't get caught up and mixed up in the labels and nitpicking with everybody. Like, oh well, this libertarian says he's a constitutionalist, but he's not pro-life. Well, I don't really know how you can be a constitutionalist and not be pro-life, since the first right anybody has is the right to life, and it's also the right to property. But besides the point, let me explain something to you. This month will mark the 41st year of Roe v. Wade. What has the Republican Party done for the cause of pro-life in the last 4 decades? Nothing. So obviously it's not an issue that the Republican Party is actually going to do something about, even though they have it in their platform. You know, so what is it, an important issue? Well, personally for me, it's the most important issue, but I'm also practical. You're not going to change the issue of how we slaughter unborn babies in this country by law. I'm not saying we shouldn't change the laws, but I'm just simply saying that that's not going to solve the problem. You have to change people's hearts and minds. That is a cultural issue. And when you have liberty, you can speak your mind, you can talk to people, you can present your argument, you can make your case, and you can change their hearts and minds.
Not losing your business.
Yeah, that's your job. Now, over-focusing on one issue where you don't have commonalities with somebody else is precisely how they keep us divided.
Yep.
Focus on the broad principles of liberty that are in the Constitution. You're not going to fix your culture overnight. You're not going to put your government back in the box overnight. You're not going to end the Fed overnight. But if you don't start now and you don't do it soon, we may never get a chance to do it. But get excited.
Well, excuse me.
It's okay. We're almost out of time.
All right, man. Well, I breathed in real fast to talk. You know, you take, and then there are issues that are hot button issues that really get traction. And the Second Amendment was one of them. And the drone issue with Rand Paul, the Cruz issue with his semi-filibuster. And there are hot issues that get a lot of traction across the country. This NSA issue is a bonding issue across all political parties. You know, there's a lot of people. You know, Justin Amash put his amendment out there, and he had a lot of Democrats on his side. So there are things that are powerful that can affect change. Now, I don't want to say frustrating, but it is frustrating because, you know, being on a lot of different groups and watching what people get caught up in and stuff like that, there are people who get this purist mentality, like, you know, Rand Paul said this, or he did that, or he didn't do this, or he was talking about, you know, Snowden the other day, and everybody goes off psychomatic over what he was saying. And, you know, and you got to go, God, grow up, you know? I mean, I don't know how to explain this to you, but that's a non-issue. You know, for one, Rand Paul has to be extremely careful because his father, you know, got the crap beat out of him for 30 years in Congress, you know, with a break in there. But he has to be extremely careful because he's probably going to run. And so everybody's going to try to pin him as some kind of crazy libertarian. So he's picking his battles. And he has to be politically smart in how he answers questions because people are looking to rip him apart. All right, and not just on the left, but on the right. And sometimes I think, honestly, when I listen to him interviewed on leftist stations, they treat him more respect than his fellow Republicans do. And when I look at Rand Paul, because I didn't know that much about him, I knew his dad, and I didn't really know that much about Ron Paul in the past, so I had to get caught up with him. You know, his constitutional issues, why he stood on things the way he stood, you know, what was his strengths, what did he bring to the table, you know, how did he impact my country, you know, there's things I don't agree with and things I do agree with, but the man made an impact. And along comes his son, who's a senator, which is a pretty powerful because you're one of 100 versus one of 435 House reps, you know, and you got 6 years under your belt. You know, I believe that he's a savvy politician, but I still like his core values. And you just got to go, you know, if you're looking for Jesus, you ain't going to find it in a politician, I guess is another way of putting this. So quit nitpicking and focus on the bigger picture. And also, here's another point. 2016 comes after 2014.
Carry the one. Carry the one divided. Yeah, you're right. 2016 does come after 2014.
Yeah. So relax on the presidential election and quit worrying about it because we don't even know who's going to run. We don't know if they're going to be alive, if they, you know, don't crash in a plane or a car accident or assassinated or whatever. Focus on the things that
eat one too many
impact.
Donuts.
Yeah. Yeah. You're funny. But, you know, you got to focus. You got to focus on the things that you can impact. And part of and to me, it's twofold. And maybe it's just the way I look at life through my lenses is, number one, I need to educate myself. And I had huge gaps in federal politics, huge gaps on the war. I had just huge gaps all the way around because I really wasn't caught up in federal politics. And the economy, economic issues, I thought I understood finances until I really started studying the Fed and Ron Paul, and it was like, oh, my God, I don't know anything. And now I know more than I want to. But one is you've got to educate yourself. Two is you got to get around like-minded people who are sane and don't get all caught up in crap they can't change or, you know, things like that and want to win, you know, who have a reasonable mindset about them. Because and you say this all the time, and I think it's important. I have no love for the Republican Party. I'm not a party person. I've never been. I'm born in Oregon before it became a blue state. Lived in Washington before it became a blue state. Spent half my life in Alaska. I'm extremely independent person, and extremely non people organization type person. So I'm not really into parties, but I'm a pragmatic person, and I realize that right now. When it comes to 2014, you got an R or D in 99% of the cases. And that's all you got. And I know there's third parties. I've interviewed, I don't know, 30, done 25, 30 interviews through the primary, you know, with people running in different, you know, from Congress to sheriffs to presidential runs, you know, spent a lot of time and energy on the third parties, researched them, watched them, followed them. You know, and interviewed him. So, I mean, I'm not opposed to parties, you know, and multiple parties. But I also know in 2014, 99% of the time, you got a R or a D. So, and we're not going to get rid of all the rhinos in 2014. Because, number one, you don't have people running against them or primarying them is the word, you know, in every case. So, you know, you got what you got. And so you can either say, well, I'm going to sit home and let the Democrat take it or let fate run it. I think it's a cop-out, you know. And not all rhino or moderate Republicans are bad. There's just people who have – that's just typical. You've got people from across the spectrum. The question you have to ask yourself is, do I want to keep the House? Do I want to replace every rhino that I can that's being primaried? How can I facilitate that? And more importantly, do I want the Senate back? Because if you got the House and the Senate and you got the best mix possible, then we've done a great thing in 2014. And all that will take is 1% to 2% higher turnout. It's that simple, at least in my mind. Maybe I oversimplify things.
Well, I don't know that. I don't think you're oversimplifying things. I think that we tend to want to overcomplicate things because that gives us a rationalization and excuse. You know, like, oh, the New World Order is here, so I'm just going to complain about it because there's nothing I can do about it. Or I'm just going to go back to watching reality TV or get myself immersed in my kids' soccer games and my job. Well, you know, that's not the right attitude. The right attitude is that there are more of us than there are of them. We can make a difference no matter how corrupt, no matter how rigged, no matter how bad the system is. You know, our founding fathers were in a very tightly rigged, bastardized system, and they fought an 8-year war, wrote a constitution, and, you know, pledged their lives, their honor and their sacred honor and their fortunes to get it. So, you know, how can you be expected to do less with what you've been given? So just do something every day. And I think that it is that simple. I think that we can win. And you just have to focus, and you just have to remain positive, and you just have to get other people involved. If 114 million people didn't vote last time, do you think you can grab 3 to 5 million of those and get them to vote this time and tip the balance?
Of course. Or all of us grab 3 to 5 million of them.
Exactly. So that's all that it takes. That's all that it takes. And what Peter Schiff was talking about is an inevitable economic consequence for the stuff that has already been done. The only question is what comes next. And that is up to you. Is it going to be a commodity-backed U.S. Treasury dollar and a constitutional government, or are you going to be subsumed in some kind of global, federal, neo-technical, feudal system? It's your choice.
You mean
you're not a victim
fascism?
Unless you want – what's that?
I said you mean fascism?
Fascism, exactly. I mean, you're not a victim unless you choose to be a victim. Now, you might lose. You might get hurt. You might lose your money. You might lose your life. You might be maligned in public. Look at what's going on with Ted Cruz and Rand Paul just because they're speaking their minds in the position they were properly elected to. But if you don't fight, the only thing you're guaranteed is a loss. And that's what this is about. Take what Peter Schiff told you, learn it, understand it, know it, teach other people, and fight back. And don't fight amongst yourselves. Fight with the real enemy. And the real enemy is the wusses in the Republican Party who are actually corporatist Keynesian Democrats pretending to be conservative Republicans. Don't fall for their crap. We're almost out of time, Chris, and I think we're out of clips, so should we bring it on home?
Well, I actually had a great thought. I don't know where it went, but you know how that happens, right? You kind of caught me. I had it going on in my mind while you were talking, and then I started listening to you.
Be careful.
I think it's what's important is for people to understand why we do what we do, because you and I talk every day, what the hell are we doing? Why are we doing this? You know, I've been involved in my world, my community, my, you know, state, whatever, and, you know, business all my life. I've always been in, you know, positions where I ended up teaching, talking, whatever. So, you know, I kind of get drawn to these kind of things. You know, I saw my country, I was probably just as hoodwinked as a lot of people in this country with the wars. You know, I didn't know. Now I do, and I'm disgusted. Those two documentaries I watched today, I was like, oh, my God, I just want to crawl in a hole and read a book. I mean, it was just freaky stuff, and they were well
done.
They were, oh, my God. And so, you know, yeah, it can be overwhelming, but you know what? 2010 was only 3 years ago, and it was explosive, and it was exciting, and great things happened, you know? And so you have to look at the successes, too. They are masters, and I'm saying they. I'm talking about both sides, R's and D's, and the media, and the corporate controllers, and the lobbyists, and the, you know, the brain trust people who figure all this crap out. Marketing is everything. And so they are masters at marketing fear, at marketing. They tell you when to be happy, when to be sad, when to be scared, what to focus on that day. And you've got to break away from that, you know. An Alaskan that I just don't fall for that crap. I'm excited about that. Me, for my family.